Jeremy Badenoch is angry about. We don't notice the results of the inquiries. We don't properly clock the ones that matter. Is there a more important inquiry in recent years, COVID exempt, than the Chilcot inquiry? Years and millions of pounds spent on ensuring that we don't wade illegally into ludicrous Middle Eastern engagements again? I don't think there is. So why on earth are more people not noting its findings?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, police are searching for three suspects after four ambulances belonging to the Jewish community were set on fire in North London. Officers are treating the attack in Golders Green overnight as a hate crime. The vehicles were set alight, causing cylinders inside to explode and windows in nearby homes to break. Sir Keir Starmer has been giving his reaction.
This is a horrific anti-Semitic attack. My thoughts, I think all of our thoughts, will be with those in the vicinity, the residents who are understandably very concerned, a Jewish community across the country deeply concerned. Anti-Semitism has no place in our society, and it's really important that we all stand together at a moment like this.
Separately, the Prime Minister says every lever will be pulled to help with cost of living pressures as a result of the Iran war. Sir Keir Starmer is to chair an emergency COBRA meeting later to address the economic impact of the conflict. Iran has warned that it'll completely close the Strait of Hormuz if President Trump attacks the country's power stations. Donald Trump has threatened to obliterate the sites unless Tehran reopens the global shipping route tonight. Defence analyst Colonel Simon Diggins has told LBC Donald Trump's strategy is extremely risky.
There is an element of gamble about what he's been doing, and I think the kind of bold threats with very hard deadlines probably don't help anybody, because you do get a toxic reaction back. People basically, and they're playing each other now rather than the game. And I think that's very hard for everybody to work out, therefore, what is the way forward.
A pilot and co-pilot of a plane have been killed in a collision at New York's LaGuardia Airport. The Air Canada plane had just landed when it collided with a fire engine. All flights at the airport have been suspended. Scotland has become the first part of the UK to test babies for spinal muscular atrophy. The rare genetic condition affects around 70 babies in the UK every year and causes progressive muscle weakness. And seven locations have been chosen for new towns in England. At least 10,000 homes will be built in places including South Gloucestershire and Manchester. Ministers have promised that construction work will start before the next election. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 203 points at 9,714. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales through today. Some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Way up here, right at the edge of oxygen, in space, that's where you'll find us. O2 Satellite keeps you connected in more places than ever before. So even when you're far from everything, you won't have to miss a thing. Introducing O2 Satellite. O2. Essential for living.
30-day rolling add-on. £3 per month. Device type, app location and other restrictions apply. See o2.co.uk/terms.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. 3 minutes after 10 is the time. And, well, flipping heck. It's deja vu all over again, isn't it? We should start beginning the programme with I Got You, Babe by Sonny and Cher, which, I don't think you need to be a massive cineast to recognise as a motif, most obviously associated with the opening moments of Groundhog Day, or the recurring opening moments of Groundhog Day, the Bill Murray film. Because, how do you do it, do you think? How do you focus on meaningful questions when the man in charge is mad? I think we began last week's program. Did we do, or was it the week before? Pointing out that Donald Trump is a deranged liar, and it makes analysis, it makes prediction almost impossible. So let's just recap briefly, right? This isn't a war. It is an, quote, excursion a word that has no meaning in the context of what's happening in the Middle East, but the word that Donald Trump has used repeatedly. I think, honestly, because someone used the word incursion in front of him, and he misheard, misunderstood, and carried on regardless. So it isn't a war, it's an excursion, but we have won the war. We have won the war so successfully that we don't need any help. But if people don't send us help, then they will suffer unimaginable punishment if they don't send us the help that we don't need. We certainly don't need aircraft carriers, but my goodness me, if Keir Starmer doesn't send aircraft carriers soon, then I am going to be furious with him because he's not Winston Churchill. Of course, reports that Donald Trump thinks that Winston Churchill is an insurance company in this country, as opposed to a wartime leader, have neither been confirmed nor denied. So it isn't a war, but we've won it, except we haven't won it, but we don't need any help, except we do need help. Is that about right? Have we got that about right? It isn't a war, but we've won it, and we don't need any help because we've won it, but we better get help soon, otherwise we might not win it. And then you come to the Strait of Hormuz, of course, and the claim that it is not necessary for America to stay in the area, followed within a couple of hours, the claim that it is absolutely necessary to stay in the area. In fact, if Iran don't open the Strait of Hormuz immediately, then he's going to start blowing up power plants. But an hour before that, he made it absolutely clear that they could just leave anyway because they don't get affected by the partial closure of the Strait of Hormuz, so they don't need to worry about it anyway, and maybe they will leave it all to allies or to NATO. So, to recap again, it's not a war, it's an incursion, but we've won the war. We haven't won the war, but we definitely don't need help. We do need help, but we don't need aircraft carriers. We do need aircraft carriers, and you better jolly well send them. The Strait of Hormuz is not a problem for us. We could just leave it and go home now because we've won the war that isn't a war, except that we need to open the Strait of Hormuz, and if our allies don't come and help us soon, then I'll be absolutely furious. And it's 6 minutes after ten. I've only been speaking for 2 or 3 minutes. It's a war, but it's not a war. We've won it, but we haven't won it, but we have won it. We don't need help, but we do need help, but we don't need help. But he's Vicky Pollard. He's Vicky Blumming Pollard, isn't he? Yes, but no, but no, but yes, but yes, but no, but no, but no, but yes, but. So it's a war, but it's not a war. We've won it, but we haven't won it, but we have won it. We don't need help, but we do need help, but we don't need help, but we do need help. Yes, but we do, but we don't. Yes, but we do. The Strait of Hormuz is nothing to do with us, but we're going to have to get it open because it's really important. But we don't need it, but we don't need help, but we do need help, but we need to get it open. These situations are not funny. And yet they kind of are. I don't know how amusing it would be if you had family in the area, anywhere in the area, but they are not funny, these situations, these scenarios are not funny. And yet, we still lack the, what's the word I'm looking for? We still lack the vocabulary, the tools to work our way through it. What's the point of this program? A question you have no doubt asked yourself many, many, many times in the past. I know Keith has. But what is the point of this program? When we routinely, and of course imperfectly and very fallibly, but we routinely take indisputable facts and discuss them. Or if we are discussing disputable facts, we acknowledge the differences and the intersection, if you like, of dispute that must become therefore irrefutable, the things upon which everybody agrees. So if it was sport, you could be passionately supporting one side or the other, but you'd have to agree on what the offside rule was, even if you were disagreeing furiously on whether or not it had just been breached by your player or their player. What do you do when the referee holds up all the cards he's got, blows his whistle and awards a goal all at the same time? What do you do when the referee or the man in charge of the whole game says black is white, up is down, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength, war is peace? There is a war, but there's not a war. It's an excursion, but we've won it, except we haven't won it, and we don't need help, but we do need help, but we don't need aircraft carriers, but we do need aircraft carriers. Please send aircraft carriers. We don't need any help opening the Strait of Hormuz, but we do need help opening the Strait of Hormuz, and you better send that help, otherwise we'll start bombing power stations, except we don't need to start bombing power stations because we don't actually need the Strait of Hormuz. Only our allies use the Strait of Hormuz. It makes no difference to us. Anyway, it's good if the price of oil goes up because we make lots of money, and pick your way out of that one, people. pick your way out of that one. We don't need your help, but if anything bad happens, it will be all your fault. We do need your help, but if you don't send it, we will attack you. Even if you do send it, we'll attack you for sending it too late. While forgetting to mention that we said we didn't need it when we did, but we didn't, but we did, but we didn't, because it's not a war, it's an incursion, an excursion that we have already won, even though you can't win an excursion, you can only win a war. What do you do? How do you process, unpick this? And the answer is the same as it was at the beginning of this mess. The same as it was at the beginning of this mess. And I still don't know what the answer is. I do know that if you were in favour of this madness, if you were the kind of clown that was using it as an opportunity to attack Keir Starmer, of all people, I do know that if you are so beloved of the racism, the misogyny and the climate change denial that you think Donald Trump is your man and a stand-up guy and you cheer him to the rafters and down with international law and down with the Chilcot inquiry and please let me stick my fingers in my ears and whistle Dixie so that you can't point out to me what a prat I am. I do know that if I've just described you, editor of the Daily Mail, then today you'd be pretending to be furious about the fact that some missiles that landed hundreds of miles away from Diego Garcia, an airbase that you've only heard of because you've been telling lies about it with regard to the treaty that Keir Starmer has recently signed, is somehow front page news and the biggest story in town. Hundreds of miles away, according to reports. But that's the biggest story in town if you're Kemi Badenoch, because your football scarf is tied so tightly around your neck that you haven't just cut off the flow of blood to your head. You're in very, very, very grave danger of cauterizing your entire brain. I'm furious that Keir Starmer didn't tell me about some missiles that landed hundreds of miles away from a British airbase. Hello, is that the Daily Mail? Please may you put me on your front page. I have a look at the Financial Times. Have a look at responsible journalism. Journalism that recognises the importance, for example, of international law, that remembers the disaster of Iraq, that knows what the Chilcot inquiry was for, that can look at what we've just described and see it clearly. It's a war, but it's not a war. It's an excursion. We've already won, but we haven't won. We'll be home in a week, but we might be there for months. We're going to change the regime, but we don't need to change the regime. They've got a nuclear capability, but we destroyed their nuclear capability 9 months ago. They might get a nuclear capability, but there's no way they're going to get a nuclear capability. We need to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. We don't need to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. We need your help, but we don't need your help. Send an aircraft carrier. Don't send an aircraft carrier. We don't need your help, but if you don't send your help, we're going to attack you and insult you. And in fact, even if you do send help, we're going to attack you and insult you because we are Donald Trump. A deranged liar. But Keir Starmer can't turn his phone off, you see. I saw one claim this morning that there's something questionable about the fact that they've only released 40-odd words from a 20-minute conversation. I'll tell you what, if I had a 20-minute conversation with Donald Trump and came away with 40-odd words that I thought made sense, I'd consider it a win. In fact, whoever was charged with culling 40 comprehensible words from a 20-minute conversation with Donald Trump should get a bloody medal, or at least a promotion. Because so much of the world is still labouring under the illusion that there is anything remotely normal about this. It's a war, but it's not a war. We've won, but we haven't won. We need your help, but we don't need your help. It'll be over in a week, it'll be over in a month. It'll be over in a month, it'll be over in a year. It may never be over. I wasn't forced into it by Israel. I was forced into it by Israel. I know what I want. I don't know what I want. I know what the plan is. There is no plan. And here we are. Wondering what the hell Keir Starmer is supposed to do, to which I have an answer. Keir Starmer has told you from the very start what he is supposed to do. Keir Starmer is supposed to ensure two things. What? Well, three things, really. Ten, if you go all the way back to the Chilcot checklist. There's my piece of paper. YouTube fans, nothing on it yet except the number one. Number one, a clear and viable plan. You may have picked up from the first 10 minutes of this programme that there ain't one. Number two, legality. The idea that international law should not matter is tantamount to international anarchy. It is the final redoubt, the last resort of the unforgivable idiot. Because if international law doesn't matter, what laws do? If countries aren't required to abide by internationally agreed treaties, why should people? And the answer is pretty clear. There's a character, there's a type of character. In the context of Donald Trump, it is a person so beloved of the racism, the misogyny and the climate change denial that they don't think the laws and the rules should apply to their man. That's not a big surprise to you, that, is it, given that people are prepared to defend his multiple felonies, his self-confessed sex offending, his lies about elections, still treating him. Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail wants him to be Prime Minister, of course. But that's about the racism, the misogyny and the climate change denial. So you end up claiming that international law shouldn't matter. This is what they do to their fans. God knows what they do to their critics. So it's got to be a clear and viable plan. It's got to be legal. And it's got to be in the British interests. Which brings us, in case you're wondering, to the question that I am going to ask you today. The British interests. So let me run through the laminated Chilcot checklist that I, sweet summer child that I am, thought that everybody who does what I do for a living would at least have read by now, even if they weren't referring to it every day. It's laminated, so I could even leave it in the studio and other people could use it, but I don't know how many people are even aware of the fact that the Chilcot inquiry was conducted in large part to ensure that we didn't repeat the mistakes of Tony Blair's excursion in Iraq, deliberate misuse of the word excursion there, as opposed to Donald Trump's misuse of the word excursion, which is not deliberate at all. Why do we care? I'll run you through them 10 quickly. We'll come back and we'll answer them together. Why do we care? What is happening now? What might happen next? What should we do? How do we ensure action is lawful? What does success look like? What do we need to do to deliver? How should we do it? How will you monitor performance? Is the policy working? Looking at the front pages of the comics today, as opposed to the newspapers, you've got the Daily Mail has gone absolutely mad. The Daily Telegraph remains absolutely mad. The Financial Times remains calm and detail-driven and incredibly illuminated. And the Guardian is concentrating on the facts and Iran's latest vow to target water sites if Donald Trump hits the power plants that he doesn't need to hit because he's already won, in order to keep open the Strait of Hormuz that he doesn't need to keep open because he doesn't need it, but he needs to hit power plants in order to ensure that they do open it. So what should Keir Starmer do? I mean, in many ways, 3, 4, 5 questions that are coming around again and again and again. Why is Donald Trump doing this? Can't answer that. You can't answer that, because if you answer it, he will say 5 minutes later the polar opposite of what you've just said. He will make a Muppet out of you. Why is Donald Trump doing this? No idea. But we will continue to ask the question because we have to. We have to. Second question. What should Keir Starmer do? Now, from a patriotic point of view or a British point of view, that is the biggest question in town. What should Keir Starmer do? And the latest question is with regard to attempts, military attempts, to limit Iran's ability to close the Strait of Hormuz to entities and powers that it sees as an enemy. Some ships are getting through. I don't think that's been widely enough reported in the UK as well. If you are neutral or friendly, from Iran's point of view, the Strait of Hormuz is not shut to you. Which brings us, of course, to one of the questions on the Chilcot checklist about British interests and what we need to do to deliver. But I don't think it's that straightforward. I think it's the fourth question. I said to you on Friday, Keir Starmer has answered 3 questions, and he will soon have to answer a fourth. I wasn't expecting that to become true by tea time, but it did. Question number one, should he join Trump and Netanyahu's illegal war? Answer, no. Question number two, should he allow British air bases to be used when Iran's retaliation targets our allies and ourselves? Answer, yes. Question number three, should any of that change the level of involvement in the original illegal war? Answer, no. Question number four, when Iran's retaliation involves closing the Strait of Hormuz, which has incredible impacts upon British interests, should Keir Starmer get more involved in American attempts to specifically reopen that strait? Answer, I think yes. And that is the question I'll be asking you eventually after this.
LBC.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
Thanks for the key deliverables, David. Now, who'd like to...
Stay out all night! Yahoo!
That's brilliant. So, OK, sales targets. Are we hitting...
The dance floor! Party time! Woohoo!
There's more than one you, and with Specsavers 2-for-1, you can choose glasses for at least two yous. From £70 with standard single-vision lenses.
Nice moves, David!
Book an appointment at specsavers.co.uk. Conditions apply.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
And Starmer doesn't have the luxury that we have of pointing and laughing. The Prime Minister of the United Kingdom doesn't have the luxury that Cammy Badenoch has of just belching bilge and getting it repeated verbatim on the front page of the Daily Mail. Keir Starmer has to deal with the twin realities of Donald Trump's derangement, his utter unreliability and his profound dishonesty, and the escalating situation in the Middle East, the escalating situation with regard to Iran. So, why do we care? And this is about one question and one question only now. This is about whether or not British air bases should be made available to American planes deployed to attack Iranian positions contributing to the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. So this is the fourth question that Keir Starmer has to answer. And he will do what he's done with the previous three. But for the first time, I'm not entirely clear what the answer is. I'm not entirely clear what the answer is. Question number one, why do we care? That's easy, right? What does this mean for British interests? What are the risks of acting or doing nothing, including in the longer term? What is different now? Well, that's easy to do. The British economy is on toast as this continues. They're even calling it Trumpflation. This is the obvious notion of how the war and the economic storm could affect Britain. Everything from your mortgage to your pension to the cost of food. Obviously, your energy bills, your fuel bills, the cost of filling up your car. Still, you marvel at the people in favour of the war who are also going to be furious about the cost of filling up your car, but I think the days when we're able to understand what motivates them are probably behind us. The cost of your coming holiday, if you're lucky enough to be having them, the cost of your weekly shop, all of those things are why do we care? Question number two, what is happening now? Well, we know that ships seen as friendly to or from powers friendly to the United States and Israel are not confident that they can get through the Strait of Hormuz unmolested. So insurers won't allow it, and therefore mariners won't undertake it. What might happen next? America might try to take out the facilities that allow the Strait of Hormuz to be held hostage in this way. Question number four, what should we do? This is what Chilcot told prime ministers they had to do in the future to avoid the disaster of Tony Blair's Iraq. Have you designed your options collaboratively, built in challenge and presented ministers with clear information on risks, opportunities and costs? Legal implications, absolutely paramount. How do we ensure action is lawful? Because if it's not lawful, you're sending messages to every rogue regime in the world that they are free to ride roughshod over international law as well. What does success look like? Easy. It involves British ships or ships containing goods that will benefit the British economy travelling through the Strait of Hormuz unmolested, as they were doing before Donald Trump went to war. What do we need to deliver? What are the resource implications of your options? Well, at this stage, we simply allow our air bases in that region to be used. How should we do it? Again, I think we've answered that question. How will you monitor your performance? You'll watch the passage of ships through the strait and work out whether or not things are getting worse or better. And then evaluation, is the policy working? And that will be the fifth question. If Keir Starmer goes ahead with his plan to allow American aeroplanes to use UK bases, and a week, a month, a day and a half down the line, you have to ask, is the policy working? Okay? So, 23 minutes after 10 is the time. The question, pretty simply, is should Keir Starmer move to his fourth position now? Whether or not you want to use the Chilcot list or not is up to you. I've got a laminated copy of it. You can find it online under the headline, The Chilcot Checklist. The very simple question is, should Keir Starmer allow, I mean, this is a spokesman from Downing Street on Friday, the leaders have agreed that the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz was essential to ensure stability in the global energy market, and therefore the suggestion that UK air bases, if not personnel, should be used in that process seems to me to be irresistible. So what should Keir Starmer do? There were reports at the weekend that that Japan had negotiated a sort of free pass. I don't think those reports are entirely reliable. I think it was more of a work in progress, more of a moving piece. But whether or not the shift from not being involved at all to being involved in retaliation to the retaliation to not escalating our involvement in the overall exercise to allowing British bases to be used for strikes to get the Strait of Hormuz open. And I want to know whether you agree with me that he has to. Even though it involves, in some ways, hitching yourself to Trump's bandwagon or continuing to hitch yourself to elements of Trump's bandwagon, the British interests now in getting the Strait of Hormuz open to our friendly ships is so acute that Keir Starmer has to do what he can to achieve it. I am happy, not happy to be wrong, but I am happy to be disagreed with. I'm always happy to be disagreed with. 0345 6060 973. I don't think that there's any diplomatic option here. I don't think we can somehow portray ourselves to Iran as a friendly nation that should be allowed to go through the strait, and I don't think we should, because the Iranian regime is and remains hideous, but so is the American regime. The British interests, point number one on the Chilcot checklist. Point number one on the Chilcot checklist. What does this mean for British interests? But also, what are the risks of acting or doing nothing, including in the longer term? So what are the options? Let Trump use the bases. Option two, some sort of diplomatic agreement with Iran that returns us to where we were before this ludicrous war started. I don't see that. Point number three, escalate even further. Send personnel, send equipment to help with Trump's ludicrous war. I don't think we should do that. But the British interests are tied up so completely with the Strait of Hormuz that I think we have reached the fourth point of the question. And you may know more about this than I do. Let me make that absolutely clear. It may be, and I think Trump was given this advice, but he thought that it would be rendered redundant by the speed with which the war that isn't a war would be won, but has already been won. I don't know that you can actually do what needs to be done in the Strait of Hormuz without putting boots on the ground. So again, if you've read further into this than I have, or you, and I've read a lot, I've got to be honest with you, or you have a better understanding of the region than I do, which would not be too difficult, then you can tell me why Starmer offering the bases to the Americans is not an obvious yes, for the very simple reason that it won't make any difference to anything, except, of course, painting a target on British backs for Iranian retaliation. And I think that pretty much covers it. 27 minutes after 10 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. And the question is the same, but not the same. It is the fourth iteration of the question, what should Keir Starmer do? He's 3 out of 3. To anybody paying attention, he was right not to join the war. He was right to get involved in a retaliation against ourselves and our allies. He was right not to allow that to escalate overall involvement in the war. And I think he's right to offer our bases for use in defending our interests in getting the Strait of Hormuz open. But I'm 52-48 on this one, and I was pretty close to 100 on the other three. Sharon's in Oxford to kick things off. Sharon, what would you like to say?
Hi. Yeah, I just want to say that, from what I understand, the Straits of Hormuz aren't completely closed.
No, they're not. They're open to powers that are deemed friendly by Iran, or even neutral. Right.
Yeah, I think obviously now the terms and conditions of using the Straits have changed since the talks between Israel and Iran fell apart a couple of weeks ago.
And the US, so since, yes.
Yeah, so since then the terms and conditions at which anyone can use the Straits has changed.
Again, I know you know this, but for people listening who are relying on perhaps less honest outlets, the talks were going brilliantly, according to everybody involved. And then America and Benjamin Netanyahu decided to start a war anyway.
Yeah. So that's put a situation where now, to be able to use the territorial waters going past Iran,
yes,
there's new terms and conditions which they would like people to fulfil. So it just seems any leader's got the choice to either choose to negotiate with those terms and conditions to help their people have the things they need from those straits, or try and force their way through the military action. But obviously it is their territorial waters, so forcing your way through in itself could
you
be perceived as aggressive.
I don't think you can do that, can you? Because
that military action is forcing your way through, or they set
well, no,
out
the military negotiate. Action precedes a hopefully safe passage through.
But the thing is, they've already laid out terms and conditions to use the straits, so which other people are using if they want to. So the thing is, I guess they've got to decide, you know, if we're going to have very high energy bills, we're going to have very high food bills, we're going to have all the problems that come with that, such as shoplifting and poverty in the country in the next few months or years. Is it better to negotiate and get the things through, or is it better to take a military action, which could cost a lot of lives and may not really solve the problem?
And you think
quickly?
It's... I wish I thought it were that straightforward, but you can't, I don't think, detach yourself, can you? The UK, we share air bases, most obviously. Diego Garcia is relevant to this for a whole bunch of reasons. You've got American planes taking off from RAF Fairford. Can we really say to Iran, it's nothing to do with us, Gov? Your beef's with Donald Trump, can we send our ships through? Or can ships laden with goods that will benefit our economy come through again, please?
Well, I think obviously the fear is upsetting the Americans.
Yes, we're going to do that anyway. We do that even if we help. I mean, this is another example of why having a pigeon in place as the president, it makes a lot of analysis pointless. But it doesn't change the fact that I don't think we could persuade Iran that we're friendly, and I don't think that we should.
Well, they don't have to be friendly with Iran. They've set out the terms and conditions at which people can have their boats go through. So it's just a matter of, you don't have to be their friends. You just have to think, I don't want people in Britain to starve or go hungry or not be able to pay their choose between heating and eating. And actually, there's new terms and conditions that we need to follow to use their territorial waters. We will use that to help our people.
And then we tell America to do one.
That's the problem. I think that the people are more upset about, say, in America than they are about whether people in Britain go hungry or can't pay their bills. I think that seems to be the choice that seems to be.
I mean, you might be right. And by 11 o'clock today, I may have come round to your point of view. And I suffer from, I don't know what the correct word for it is, but I can't believe it's that straightforward. I'm sort of allergic to simplicity sometimes. We cannot negotiate with the Iranian regime independently from the United States of America and somehow get ourselves a free pass for the Strait of Hormuz when we've already been involved in retaliatory attacks on Iran. I just don't think that's an option. Getting the whole thing to stop, arguably, is where Starmer should be putting his energy. It's just gone 10:32. News bulletin on the headline. I can tell you that the Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is currently giving a statement about that hideous anti-Semitic attack on four ambulances in North London. I suspect you'll hear a bit of that during the bulletin with Dominic, and if you don't, I will play it to you after the very latest headlines with Dominic Ellis.
The Prime Minister has urged the public to stand together after four Jewish community ambulances were set on fire in North London. Police are treating the attack in Golders Green overnight as a hate crime. Cost of living pressures driven by the conflict in the Middle East will be discussed at an emergency COBRA meeting later. Sir Keir Starmer, cabinet ministers and the governor of the Bank of England are due to meet this afternoon. And the two pilots of a plane have been killed in a collision at New York's LaGuardia Airport. The Air Canada flight had just landed when it collided with a fire engine overnight. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales. Some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which, a record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 10:35. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I'll get some of Wes Streeting's statement for you imminently in response to this anti-Semitic attack on four ambulances in Golders Green. They're described as Jewish community ambulances, which will mean that it's a charity, essentially, that funds the provision of these vehicles. Thankfully, nobody hurt in this attack. But, of course, that is not going to provide a great deal of comfort to people in the Jewish community. 10:35 is the time. More on that as and when it develops. And of course, inevitably there will be a conflation of that hideous attack with the hideous events in the Middle East. And it's not hard to do, but sometimes you look at the state of the world and you wonder why other people don't find it as easy as you do. The actions of the Israeli government are not the responsibility of all Jews, whatever people from the right or the left may tell you. And there is no argument that you, if indeed this turns out to be an anti-Semitic attack motivated by events in the Middle East, there is absolutely no excuse or argument for conflating the Israeli regime with the Jewish people, let alone the Jewish people of Golders Green. 10:36 is the time. Here's a little clip of Wes Streeting, the Secretary of State for Health, discussing this attack a few moments ago.
Those responsible for this attack must know that the Jewish community will not face up to this hatred alone. The whole country will stand with them. And when we think about some of the recent anti-Semitic attacks we've seen in this country, now is a time for all decent-minded people to stand up, to speak up with one voice, that we will stand with the Jewish community here and across the country in confronting this vile anti-Semitism.
And that very much fits with what I was saying to you a moment ago about the horrific conflation of all Jewish people. And of course it's done by all sorts of people, people who don't agree with each other about anything else. But the idea that the actions of Benjamin Netanyahu's government are representative of or supported by all Jewish people on the planet, let alone in Israel, is patently wrong. And similarly, the argument that therefore Jewish people somehow bear responsibility for the actions of Israel, it may not be linked at all, but it just seems unlikely, doesn't it, in the current context, which is why we'll be keeping a very close eye on that story as it unfolds. But it is to the crucible, if you like, of the broader Middle East that we return our attention next. And the simple question, simple to ask, of whether or not, I mean, see, the problem with the Chilcot checklist is it's only got 10 points on it, and it was put together in a world without Donald Trump. I wonder whether point 11 on the Chilcot checklist should be how mad is the president? And I'm not saying that glibly, because you can tick off all 10 of these points and make a strong case for UK air bases being made available to US aircraft attacking positions that are threatening the Strait of Hormuz. You can make a very strong case for that, but point 11 is The president might lie about it. The president might attack you anyway if you're the UK prime minister. The president might completely change his plan. The president might put UK positions at risk. That is perhaps point 11. How mad is the president? It is 10:38. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. James is in Carlisle. James, what would you like to say?
Hi. I don't believe that we should allow the US to use our air bases, because even though we are going to suffer a financial impact, the potential for terrorist outcomes from it are far greater, because these people, they could see their mothers, their children, fathers, brothers, sisters getting killed, and decide those people who have attacked us rightly deserve to be attacked. And what are we going to do? Stop every Iranian from coming to the UK? Block that country entirely, because this war isn't going to stop? Or will we take a financial attack? And
so Keir Starmer addresses the nation and warns about winter is coming, as it were, and the potential economic impact if Trump and Netanyahu continue down this path. And there are reports from America at the moment that they're fairly detached from each other now, and that the Israeli regime is undertaking actions with little or no input or approval from the Americans. And Keir Starmer says, we're not getting involved, even as we pay an enormous economic price for this, because if we were to get more involved, then the Iranian regime would exact bloody vengeance, or attempt to exact bloody vengeance upon us, and that is a risk that I, as Prime Minister, am not going to take.
Yes, because...
Oh, wow.
Unfortunately, it's looking out for the people, because I think it's dangerous, because this country is bigger than Iraq. It's got a stronger military than Iraq, and America started this war knowing full well of these things, and they have still gone ahead with this attack.
I mean, is it not too late to detach ourselves from it? And I don't know what the diplomatic consequences would be of refusing America rights to use bases. I mean, happily, NATO hasn't danced to Donald Trump's tune on this, but do you really think that the Ayatollah and his cronies would be persuaded that the United Kingdom has successfully, even if I agreed with you that we should, and I don't at this point in the conversation, but even if I did, is that feasible? That Iran would go, oh no, the Brits are okay, or that Iran would somehow accept that we weren't involved as the war continued, and therefore, if they are launching terrorist cells in Western countries, they'd cross us off the list?
I don't know. It's a cutting itself off at the earliest convenience sort of thing. If we can find a way,
you're doing the thing that was question number two for Starmer, and the answer he gave to question number two was yes. The answer he gave to question number one was no. Should we join this war? No. Should we retaliate to retaliation? Yes. Of course we should. If they're sending missiles, firing missiles at our allies, if they're bombing our allies, if they're trying to bomb our bases, then of course we should retaliate. You don't just sit there and take it. And I see question four in that space. This is part of a retaliation to retaliation. And the alternative is cowardice, almost. You're
thinking
about it. I mean, if you weren't thinking about it, you could just shout things about how international law isn't very important or something like that. So,
no,
fair play to you for using your brain.
Kind of thoughts, because this war,
what's the biggest fear? The fear of the economic impact, or the fear of potential terrorist attacks on our country, on our soil? And I guess that is very much in the eye of the answerer, the eye of the responder. I mean, we can't really argue about what people are more fearful of, except to acknowledge the economic security that will insulate you from the worst impact of some of this. So the better off you are, the easier it is, perhaps, to go down the side of we must suck up the economic damage. 10:43 is the time. 03-4560-60973 is the number that you need. Thank you, James. Ash is in Northampton. Ash, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. You're normally on Mystery Hour.
I am normally on Mystery Hour, but this is sort of my area, really. So to give you some background, ex-chief officer in the Merchant Navy.
Yeah, I remember.
A teacher of Merchant Navy officers, and I've also served in the mine countermeasures in the Gulf.
Okay.
So I kind of know what I'm talking about.
I'll be the judge of that, pal.
It comes to these areas.
Yes.
So, you start with area denial. That's what mines are. All they're doing is denying sea access to certain vessels. The reason that some of the vessels can get through with Iranian help is they know where the mines are. Right. So they can just lead people through. So you kind of have two options. One, get very, very close to the Iranian regime. Get them to take you through on the proviso that you will take no other ships with you. No other people will know where you're going through and how you're getting through.
Yeah.
That is not a diplomatic solution that I think the British government wants to go down. Yep.
Yeah.
Because you're then talking about basically making a ally out of the Iranian regime.
Which was not the case before, because everybody could go through it unmolested before. So, it might not seem different in terms of outcomes, but it is different in terms of diplomacy and international relations.
Precisely. Now, what they've done is they've denied the entire southern area. Yep, the southern area is where the traffic separation scheme is. That's where merchant vessels normally go. They normally don't go anywhere near the northern area because that's where Iran is.
Right.
So, you just don't do that, okay?
Yeah.
And the international law for that, if you want to look it up, UNCLOS, United Nations Convention Laws of the Sea, that's how it works. So, option two, we try to wait this out, wait for the end of the war.
Yeah.
But even that, area denial weapons like mines, all they have to do is say they've done it.
Yes.
They don't even have to have done it. Mines are so difficult to find these days. I know everyone's got this idea of like big floating like blobs in the ocean. You're talking about like little plates that sit on the bottom of the ocean with pressure sensors.
Right.
They're incredibly difficult to find. to be able to find them, you need to have won the air war. Mine hunters themselves do not have the capability to fight an air war while hunting for mines. It's not possible.
Okay.
That's why all this is coming up about the air bases and all that kind of stuff. You have to win the air war to be able to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Is that even possible at the moment, thinking about the asymmetric threat? They send three drones that cost a couple of hundred dollars each up into the air. We then have to spend millions of pounds in manning, aerial surveillance, and intercept missiles to be able to stop them. That could go on for months. No one's even going to consider taking out the mine threat until the air war has been won. Even then, you're talking about months before you've got a dedicated transit corridor, months again before insurance even contemplates that as a safe route.
Wow.
So what's the alternative?
I don't know, mate, but you're about to tell us.
Like, the alternative is to start opening up different routes. West Africa for oil supply, maybe. But you're talking here about years of lead-in time then to be able to do it. We have put so much of our energy security and the world financial security on one choke point. 20% of the world's pretty much financial access to oil comes through that one place.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what can Starmer realistically do? I don't know. I'm not a politician. I'm just a simple seafarer.
Well, you say that. I mean, you've got a better understanding of the situation on the ground or on the water than anybody I've heard in the British media this weekend.
Thank you. But you're talking about weighing up the consequences of getting into bed with a regime like Iran to satisfy the economic interests or to go to war to stop this. If this wasn't a difficult choice, I wouldn't be phoning.
No.
Because far smarter people than me would have come up with the answer.
But there is an option three, isn't there, which is, and of course Benjamin Netanyahu becomes the known unknown in this scenario. Is that something I suggested a couple of weeks ago, is that Donald Trump just gives up, claims he's won, and goes home and never mentions it again. What happens then?
Right, but then how do you win the air war?
But do they need to win the air war if Donald Trump has just completely withdrawn while claiming a glorious victory and, you know, I mean, just let him?
Right, but you're assuming that then Donald Trump going home and just saying, I've won,
yeah,
stops the Iranians from keeping that choke point closed. And they have an economic reason to keep it closed right now, don't they?
Why?
The economic reason is that they can sell their oil from their areas and transit it through and get it out.
And the idea that we can negotiate a settlement has been blown up by Trump and Netanyahu because they were on the brink of a negotiated settlement on nuclear uranium enrichment and the rest of it, and the people chairing those negotiations thought that they were on the brink of a settlement, and then
precisely.
Trump and Netanyahu blew the whole thing up. So this
and
is terrifying.
Who wins? What's the end game of it? Who wins from us trying to go into negotiations? The only way that's going to happen, you're talking about something drastic. I don't want to be the one to say it on national radio.
But you're going.
But you're talking about expelling the United States from NATO.
Yeah.
To actually get that as a condition, is that even something we're willing to consider?
I mean, crikey, there's a lot of imponderables here. I just want to be clear that I've understood you. A lot of gratitude coming in for your contribution. Colin puts it best. He says, you really do have the best callers. I'm just a simple seafarer, must be the understatement of the week. So you can't really fight your way to getting the Strait of Hormuz open, and you can't really negotiate your way to getting the Strait of Hormuz open from the UK point of view. Is that what you're telling us?
You're going to need something bigger than the UK to do that.
And that will involve... Yeah. That will involve. Are we going to use the phrase world war?
Wider regional conflict?
Yeah, I mean, that's a euphemism, isn't it? So
yeah.
It's an attempt to erase Iran in its current form from the map completely.
That's it. If you boil it down to the basics, yes. I mean, the only way you're going to win this air war is if you destroy their ability to send up a drone. Now, I don't know if you've ever walked around the English countryside at the moment.
I have actually. Yes. So finally, an area in which I feel qualified to comment. Ash.
How many people have you seen flying a drone around?
Yeah, it's very easy. It is that simple. This is something that we've learned during the Ukraine war, isn't it? That the
yeah.
Oh boy, I mean, this is really. I like illumination, as you know, Ash. I like expertise and understanding. But this is one of those occasions where the more you know, the more your confidence in any form of swift resolution dissolves.
Well, this is why I'm on a copious amount of Prozac and get migraines every week.
I'm not surprised, because you get it. You get it. And Trump clearly doesn't. And the only analysis that makes sense, with the constant caveat that there's no point doing analysis when you're dealing with a deranged liar, the only analysis that makes sense is that he thought it would be over in a weekend, and that he disregarded all of the intelligence he was given, because the reports in the United States make it clear he was told that this would happen. But he thought that it would be dealt with so quickly, whether he was persuaded of this position or whether he just sort of slimed his way into it doesn't really matter. But he was persuaded that this would not happen. And he has no plan for what to do now that it has. And the reason why there is no plan available to him is what you have just explained to us.
The only answer I have for that is Dunning-Kruger.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, I feel I have to ask you then, just as a patriotic Brit, should Keir Starmer make UK air bases available to Donald Trump's United States and their attempts to take out the threats that you've just described as largely being untakeoutable? But you know, there are many more moving parts to this question than feasibility.
Should he?
Yeah.
I think you return to the Chilcot checklist. Do we have allies that are going to do it? Do we have a NATO resolution? Is there a UN mandate? That's it.
And I mean, there wasn't for the retaliations against the retaliations, but if there was for this, it would make the question a lot easier to answer. Listen, you've made me 8 minutes late for the break, but I don't think anybody listening to this will have the vaguest problem with that or difficulty in understanding why. Ash, stay safe. I look forward to your next appearance on Mystery Hour, frankly.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Even after all these years, even when we thought we couldn't be surprised yet still by the verbiage discharged by the President of the United States, the reference to Pearl Harbor in front of the Japanese Prime Minister is right up there, isn't it? She would never have said it, but there should have been a line back somewhere about mentioning the nukes, should there not, from the Japanese PM.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Did you know a new traffic-free Oxford Street is coming? This year, the Mayor of London will begin to pedestrianise London's flagship high street, creating more space for everyone.
That means soon you could be hearing less.
Excuse me, coming through.
And more. A bit less.
Come on! Sorry.
And plenty of. To find out more, search Oxford Street Transformation.
Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore I. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. And right now, we've got some great deals for you to make the most of. So you can secure your dream holiday and get the best choice of rooms and hotels. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person. Nothing beats a Jet 2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Natural protected, subject to availability and conditions.
Imagine sweeping through green fields, floating 5 feet above ground, sun on your face as you slide by on track to your destination. Not a care in the world as you simply lean back. And before you know it, you're there. This is how travel should feel. And on our trains, it does. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
My name is Beverly and this is my NHS story. I had to make regular journeys to my local CDC for blood tests because I had lymphoma. I think it really helps to know that you've got somewhere local. It was really a godsend.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:56 is the time. I've been told that the Metropolitan Police are set to make a statement regarding this attack on four ambulances owned by the Jewish community in North London shortly after 11 o'clock today. We will, of course, cross live to take that. Just a word upon the burdens that I bear. My inbox currently contains a smattering of people who are accusing me of being disgusting for describing that attack as anti-Semitic, and also people accusing me of not caring because it was an attack upon the Jewish community. So, weirdos and liars to the left of me, weirdos and liars to the right of me. I don't necessarily subscribe to the school of thought that that proves I must be doing something right, but it does prove that I'm right to ignore these people, except when drawing your attention to how mad any conversations in this context will quickly and irreversibly become. It's not hard, okay? The Jewish people are not responsible for the actions of the Israeli state, even when the leaders of the Israeli state say that they are acting on behalf of all Jewish people. So if this attack turns out to have a political dimension, and I personally will be surprised if it doesn't, then it changes nothing about that simple observation. And speaking of simple observations, Ash the Simple Seaman, as he called himself, almost coming in for extraordinary amounts of gratitude, actually, from you. And you can see why. I certainly would add my voice to that. The idea that there is nothing simple about this, up to and including the choices that Keir Starmer has, the choices that the United Kingdom have. But the question remains, what should Keir Starmer be doing? With regard to this request, because I can tell you that Iran has warned that letting the US base use our bases is a participation in aggression. This was a phone call with Yvette Cooper on Friday. just as it was announced that we were condemning Iran's reckless attacks and its disruption and closure of the Strait of Hormuz, and also allowing American aircraft to use bases for another exercise. The first one, of course, being the retaliation to the retaliation. That was question number two that Keir Starmer had to answer. And question number three was, does any of this change the original decision not to get involved in the probably illegal war? Answer, no. Question number four, does the Chilcot checklist, or does Keir Starmer's judgment lead him to conclude that we should be making US bases available, UK bases available to the United States if it were to undertake an attempt to take out all of the interests that are currently crippling the Strait of Hormuz? And Ash has changed my mind a bit on that, because I can answer many of the questions on the Chilcot checklist, but I don't know that I can answer question eight, planning and doing, how should we do it? Or question number nine, how will you monitor performance? Or question number 10, is the policy working? So if America wants to try, we should let them, and indeed help them. But if you have no clear idea of what success is going to look like, do you run the risk of making a bad situation worse?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, police are searching for three suspects after four ambulances belonging to the Jewish community were set on fire in North London. Officers are treating the attack in Golders Green overnight as a hate crime. The vehicles were set alight, causing cylinders inside to explode and windows in nearby homes to break. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has urged the public to stand together and not be cowed by what he called a despicable act of evil.
Our London Ambulance Service colleagues will be providing support to the team here in Golders Green to make sure that we don't skip a beat when it comes to responding to emergency call-outs. And we will also, by tomorrow morning, be providing four replacement ambulances, initially on loan, until we can provide permanent replacements. The Jewish community should not be left footing the bill for this appalling attack.
Cost of living pressures driven by the conflict in the Middle East will be discussed at an emergency COBRA meeting later. Sir Keir Starmer, cabinet ministers and the governor of the Bank of England are due to meet this afternoon. They're expected to discuss the impact on supply chains and energy security. The Prime Minister says he does understand public concern.
With the Iran war, most people are very concerned now, not only what they're seeing on their screens in relation to the conflict itself, but also that question of how's it going to affect me and my family. And so today we're looking at the economic impact, and I am asking for every lever that's available to the government to deal with the cost of living to be discussed.
It's understood there'll be no funeral service for the Soham killer Ian Huntley. His family have reportedly declined a government-funded service out of respect for the two 10-year-old girls he killed in Cambridgeshire in 2002. The 52-year-old died in hospital after he was allegedly attacked at HMP Franklin earlier this month. The two pilots of a plane have been killed in a collision at New York's LaGuardia Airport. The Air Canada flight had just landed when it collided with a fire engine overnight. Flights at the airport have been suspended. And seven locations have now been chosen for new towns in England. Ministers are promising to start building around 10,000 homes in areas including Leeds and Manchester before the next general election. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 225 points at 9,692. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales through today. Some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
A little something for spring is coming your way from Tesco Mobile. A £20 gift card. It's yours with selected club card price offers, like our 60GB SIM for just £13 a month, saving you £48. So switch today to enjoy a little extra this spring. It pays to be connected. Search Tesco Mobile. Every little helps. End 17th of May. Club card, 4G phone and 24-month credit agreement required. Savings calculated on contract duration. Terms at tescomobile.com/terms.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 11, we are poised to cross live to Golders Green for a statement by the Met on this attack on four ambulances belonging to a Jewish community service that occurred overnight. And that suggests that they have already secured intelligence that is of, well, I mean, obviously it's going to be of great interest. So we will cross live to Golders Green for that statement by the Metropolitan Police as soon as it begins, which may mean that I have to cut Ruben in Liverpool off in his prime. But we will press on regardless. The question we're asking, and it's changed for me at least, I almost feel sorry for people who were on the switchboard before Ash in Northampton made his contribution. Ash, if you missed it, remember you can rewind live radio. Former merchant seaman, he teaches officers in the Merchant Navy now, and he has undertaken mine missions in the Gulf, in I think even in the Strait of Hormuz. So whether it was what a mine actually means in the current context of this conflict or what the possibility is of removing the threat, I think you now know more about this subject than you would if you'd spent the entire weekend tuned into other broadcasts. Ruben's in Liverpool. Has it changed your answer to the question, Ruben? Should Keir Starmer make UK air bases available to the US for attacks on all of the things that currently render the Strait of Hormuz unusable?
Thanks for having me on, James. It hasn't changed my answer. My answer was already that Keir can only do what he's been doing so far, which is to, well, you could use your Ming vase analogy, try to delicately say no to Donald Trump whilst not upsetting Iran too much. I mean, the point I called in to make was more about the drones. Obviously, we heard a lot from Ash about the mines in the sea, which was all very insightful. But just a bit more on their drone capabilities. The Shahed drones have a 2,000 to 2,500 kilometre range. So even from the furthest point in Iran away from the Strait of Hormuz, they could still be launched and reach the Strait with some 200 kilometre capability left in them. So I don't see any way in which this ends, even if there were boots on the ground, even if the US took control of the whole Iranian coastline, they would still be able to launch drones in swarms, which would still be of great threat to any ships, tankers trying to pass through without authorization. So I don't see how an insurer would ever back those whilst that's still a possibility.
So, I mean, there are two options here then in terms of conclusion. One is that Iran in its current form is completely obliterated. And two is that an accommodation is reached with whatever regime, unobliterated regime, remains in place.
Yeah, exactly.
I think
as long as the Iranian government and military remains in control of anyone who wants to oppose the US or anyone who simply wants to control the Strait of Hormuz, they will be capable of doing that. As long as it exists, essentially, as you've said, it would require a total annihilation, total regime change, total control of their military to stop this. Or it would require Donald Trump to simply walk away, as you said before, with his tail tucked between his legs.
Well, no, he won't do that.
He's won anyway.
Well, exactly. His tail will be pointing skywards while he insists that it's the most magnificent tail in the history of tails and nobody has ever won a war like this. A bit like what he was saying 9 months ago, last time they attacked Iran, and they'd completely obliterated everything and achieved all of the goals that they couldn't share with us, but they were great goals and they go to a different school. And all of that would be true. But there was an earlier caller, I can't remember whether it was Ash or not, who suggested that wouldn't be the end of it anyway, because you have now an Iran that can't trust a negotiating process, can't trust the United States of America, was probably already in a position where it wouldn't trust anything Israel said or did, and also, you know, continues to exercise hideous power over its own population. So even if Donald Trump were to pack up and go home, you can't control what Netanyahu would do, and you can't guarantee that Iran would also settle down, so to speak.
That's the unknown that remains.
Yeah.
But with that unknown, still, the best thing for Keir Starmer to do, in my opinion, is still not to get involved as much as possible, limit our involvement, because I don't see any way in which us being involved leads to a successful outcome.
And
this is why
my position is changing. So and it's why I'm glad I said I was 52-48 at the outset. So I'm obsessed with my laminated Chilcot checklist, as you know, and I wish other people who do what I do for a living were at least aware of it, if not consulting it every 10 or 15 minutes or so. But that is the bit, isn't it? The feasibility or the plausibility of success. Question number six, policy and strategy. What does success look like? Does a clear strategy and feasible course of action that will meet policy objectives exist? Is the approach supported by analysis? And the consensus this morning here is it doesn't exist.
Yeah, I think the key word is the feasibility.
That's the key word.
Any, you know, this should have just been looked at. Obviously, this should have never happened. It should have been looked at by the US, the top brass in the US, and they should have said, and they probably did.
He got
this
the intelligence.
Completely impractical.
He just chose to ignore it. And that is coming out of the Wall Street Journal and elsewhere. I think The Economist had a big piece on it at the weekend, but he got the intelligence that this would happen. But he, I don't know, we've said before, it's the first war that's ever been waged according to the vibes of a deranged idiot, but he just sort of overruled the intelligence and somehow thought that it would all be okay anyway. And that I think is the point. So the other headlines, war in Iran is set to cut UK growth in half. Cost of filling up your car with petrol, of course, is rocketing. Cost of living is going up. Holidays, mortgages. All of this is just true. These aren't opinions. These are counting. But the idea that there's an easy solution to it is, of course, the world that Keir Starmer inhabits, even if the editors of the Daily Mail and Kemi Badenoch can pretend that things are really straightforward and simple. And the biggest story in town is a missile launched by Iran, allegedly, that was taken out of the sky 400 miles away from its supposed destination. So don't get involved at all, because then when you do come to reaching an accommodation with whatever regime remains in Tehran, you don't have to deal with the hangover of having hitched yourself to Donald Trump's deranged bandwagon. And yet, my God, what a world we live in. You know, the Iranian regime is objectively awful, albeit that it enjoys support of about 20% of the population. We've seen the horrors that they visit upon dissidents. But the United States regime is objectively awful as well, albeit that a lot of people in this country can't admit that yet. So you reach an accommodation with one awful regime, or you move in lockstep with the doomed attempts of another awful regime. That is the definition of a rock and a hard place. 10 minutes after 11 is the time. If you are just to add to that picture, the IEA, which is the International Energy Authority, I think, I haven't got the full words in front of me. It's definitely not the weird lobby group that calls itself a think tank down in Tufton Street. They're warning that the oil crisis is worse than the 1970s. Ask your nan or your mum about the oil crisis of the 1970s and then reflect upon the news that the IEA are warning that the current crisis is worse. I think it could be over quickly, but the question of how it would be over quickly is almost beyond us at the moment because of what has happened. I think as each day passes, the sheer scale of what they have set fire to and what they have set in motion becomes ever, ever harder to reconcile, up to and including a social media post that Donald Trump released 6 minutes ago that I'm now going to read to you in its entirety, live on the radio. I am pleased to report, and this is, as they would say in brackets, sick, close brackets, S-I-C, so there's no D on the end of please. President of the United States of America, that suggests that he wrote this himself. I am pleased to report that the United States of America, comma, and the country of Iran, comma, have had, comma, over the last 2 days, comma, very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East, full stop. This is me talking now, not Donald Trump. So the idea of him calling the whole thing off, claiming a glorious victory, and hoping no one ever mentions it again, just saw its odds shorten. That's where the clever money goes. Halfway through this statement, let's see where it is at the end, because I'm reading this live. I haven't read this before. You are discovering the contents of this message, as I do. Based on the tenor and tone of these in-depth, detailed and constructive conversations, which, spelt W, are we sure this is real? Are we 157%? Because, you know, you've got to be really, which, spelt W-I-T-C-H, which will continue throughout the week, I have instructed the Department of War to postpone any and all military strikes against Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure for a 5-day period, subject to the success of the ongoing meetings and discussions. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. So he will pack up, go home, and hope that nobody ever mentions it again, while simultaneously claiming a glorious victory. Wow. That was 6 minutes ago. So, as I said to you at 10 o'clock this morning, in 6 minutes' time, he could release something that pursues the polar opposite position to the one that's outlined here. But in a normal universe, you would welcome that, particularly given the massively increased understanding of the issues that we have as a consequence of the callers to this programme today. In a normal universe, you would welcome that. But this is Donald Trump's world now. We're not in Kansas now, Toto. And therefore, you can only say that's good until it isn't. That looks good until he does something else. That looks good until he does a reverse ferret and makes an announcement that pursues the entirely different position. It looks like he's running away. And that has to be welcomed. And you have to probably then, as Keir Starmer, just to remind you how difficult his current situation is, Keir Starmer then has to become complicit in the pretense that Donald Trump has done okay here, because to point out that he's a snivelling idiot who's running away from the problem he caused, would be diplomatically unhelpful. We're still waiting for this statement by the Metropolitan Police in Golders Green, so I may interrupt this in order to cross live to that.
LBC.
I'm Leah, and this is my NHS story. I could just feel my body didn't feel right, so my GP referred me to the CDC. Had some blood tests done, and within 24 hours I had my results. And that just reassured me that I was being taken seriously.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
Imagine you in a nice comfy seat with your hands behind your head, taking in the views instead of taking on the road, maybe even taking a nap. That's the bliss of getting where you need to go without worrying about driving. Book your train journey via avantiwestcoast.co.uk and we'll take you there. Avanti West Coast. Feel good travel.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
At Lidl, we won't be beaten on price on our deluxe hot cross buns. Like our Good Housekeeping Institute taste-approved, indulgently cheesy buns. Ooh, or our deliciously rich and velvety triple chocolate buns. Lidl, more to value.
Price matched in most major UK supermarkets until 4th of the 4th. See lidl.co.uk/spendless. While stocks last, exclusions apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
16 minutes after 11 is the time. Listen, for the absolute avoidance of doubt, there is no pleasure whatsoever in seeing your fears realised or your predictions come true. So when I reminded you at 10 o'clock this morning that it is a largely pointless exercise trying to unpick or analyse any situation that Donald Trump is involved with, I wasn't expecting it to come quite so catastrophically true quite so quickly. So if you're just joining us, he's posted on social media claims that the United States has reached an accommodation with Iran that would involve or regards a complete and total resolution of hostilities in the Middle East. Something I suggested to you was the best case scenario for all concerned. He packs up and goes home, and nobody ever mentions again what a disaster it has been. Caveat number one, I don't think he's got much influence over Benjamin Netanyahu anymore. So if Benjamin Netanyahu wants to carry on killing Iranians, and indeed people in Lebanon, then I'm not sure Donald Trump has got the agency to stop him. And caveat number two, the biggest caveat of all, the constant caveat, is that he might say the polar opposite in 30 seconds' time. And I wish that wasn't true, but you know that it is. The only mystery remaining is how on earth people who do what I do for a living, or indeed are in the British political establishment, could ever have thought that Donald Trump was somebody that they should be supporting, or somebody that the Keir Starmer should be getting into bed with, or could ever have thought that he had a plan, a clear and viable plan, or a legal rationale. And these are some of the biggest names in UK commentary and in UK politics. Kemi Badenoch, Nigel Farage, all of these people who looked at what we looked at and thought, yeah, we should definitely be jumping into Donald Trump's pocket. He's our guy. He's our man. Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail writing about he'd never been more ashamed to be British. than as a consequence of Keir Starmer's decision not to get involved in an illegal war that has failed and which Donald Trump, as of now, looks set to abandon in a deeply humiliating fashion, albeit that he'll pretend it's been a glorious victory, just like he did 9 months ago when he obliterated all of Iran's military capabilities just 9 months before having to go to war against them because Iran's military capabilities were so great. 18 minutes after 11, we're in one of those curious hinterlands on the programme at the moment because we're waiting for a statement from the Metropolitan Police, which I think by nature of the timing and the speed with which it follows the arson attack on four ambulances belonging to the Jewish community in Golders Green, but by nature of this timing, it is likely to be quite substantive and serious. So we want to take that live. But of course, we are in the business of phone-in radio in the meantime, and I think I'm going to stay with this question. So, well, do you want to react live to this? I mean, I have to. Why do I have to do all the hard work around here? I have to react live to this. I have to react live to, well, A, Donald Trump claiming that they're about to call the whole thing off. B, the fact that the President of the United States can't spell which. Do you think that's autocorrect? Do you think it's auto? So when he writes, which will continue throughout the week, and he spells it W-I-T-C-H, like, you know, Glenda in The Wizard of Oz, or Wicked, if you prefer, a more up-to-date cultural reference. Do you think it's because he's always going on about witch hunts? And so his autocorrect now on his phone changes W-H-I-C-H to, that's probably quite generous. He's just as thick as mince, isn't he? That's probably, I think that's highly charitable. So I am pleased to report. I am pleased to report? That makes no sense. And detailed and constructive conversation. I mean, who wouldn't trust a man who can't spell witch to conduct detailed, in-depth and constructive conversations with the Iranian regime? But that's the best we've got at the moment. That is literally the best we've got, is the hope that he's telling the truth, even if he can't spell witch. So do you want to react live to that? I'll read you the whole thing again, and then I'll remind you of the phone number, and then we'll talk to Taz, who's in Haywards Heath, about the question that's already on the board, and you can tell me, what do you make of this? I am pleased to report that the United States of America and the country of Iran have had, over the last 2 days, very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East, based on the tenor and tone of these in-depth, detailed and constructive conversations, which will continue throughout the week. I have instructed the Department of War to postpone any and all military strikes against Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure for a 5-day period, subject to the success of the ongoing meetings and discussions. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. He has, to coin a phrase, completely bottled it. But that is something we should all celebrate. That's my gut reaction. What is yours? 0345 6060 973. Taz is in Haywards Heath. It's almost out of date, the question we were asking at 10 o'clock this morning, Taz, but we'll press on regardless. What would you like to say?
Oh, yeah. Hi, James. First time caller.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you very much. I think, well, I mean, I think Donald Trump, I think, is an absolute lunatic. He's been pulled by the nose by Netanyahu, in my opinion.
How dare you say that? Dick by name Little John in the Daily Mail wants him to be the government of this country. He wants to be ruled by him. What an outrageous slur on an obviously brilliant leader.
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, Netanyahu has been trying to get a war with Iran for 40 years. And, you know, he's finally found a president who's got an ego that's so big he can effectively manipulate him and pull.
That was what Marco Rubio said in the first days of this excursion or incursion or war or whatever they're calling it today. That was what Marco Rubio said. So you definitely have a lot of support for that analysis.
Yeah, but the problem is, in terms of him pulling America into it, he's pulling us into it. And my view is that Scott Sarma shouldn't support the Americans in their war with Iran. I think mediation has to be the solution.
What if he already is?
What you just said about the fact that Trump seems to be pulling back on another threat.
What if he is? What if that conversation that he had with Keir Starmer is the reason why he's decided to call the whole thing off?
Yeah. Yeah,
I think if Alistair Campbell was in Downing Street, that would already be going around to every newsroom in the country, I think, that this is a massive victory for Keir Starmer. And it might be. Yeah. He said to him, look, it's not doable. Even if we wanted, I'd really love to. but it's not doable. Whatever anybody else is telling you, it can't be done. The only way you get Hormuz open is by packing up and going home. You cannot fight your way. This is what Ash in Northampton explained so brilliantly. Someone has, I mean, for now, because we all fall into the trap of thinking that it's worth analysing this as if it's casting concrete when he could undo the whole thing in 30 seconds' time. But for now, this is the best case scenario, and the best available explanation of why it's happened is somebody has finally managed to prevail upon him that he can't, God, I nearly swore then, he can't BS his way out of the Strait of Hormuz. He just can't do it. It's not doable. So your only option is to pretend that you've won and go home.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's all about trust, though. The trust, the Iranians clearly don't trust the Americans. I mean, they were bombed, a few months ago, and then they were having discussions. There was mediation about the nuclear element, and then they decided to bomb them again, attack them again. So, as far as the Iranians are concerned, I suppose they're going to be thinking, well, what's to stop them doing it again? So, I think at this stage they've decided it's or bust, as it were.
And they get to claim a victory as well, of course. The Iranian regime, removal of the Ayatollah and much of the high command notwithstanding, Iran will be a more dangerous place for dissident Iranians than it was before Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu started bombing it. And therefore, from the point of view of the Iranian regime, this is a glorious victory against the Satan or the Satans of the West. That is how they'll sell it. And they're probably going to have a stronger case to claim victory than Donald Trump will, even as they both do a lap of honour. Wow. What's the nickname that they give him? Is it Tataco? T-A-C-O. What is that? Is that Trump always chickens out? Trump always chickens out. Do you know, I doubt that they listen to this program, he says, with extraordinary self-importance. But you'd almost try to caution people who are on the right side of history, you know, people who aren't writing columns for the Daily Mail about how they've never been more ashamed to be British. You'd almost sort of say to people who've called everything right here, Don't call him a chicken, because you know he'll just have another hissy fit. Just let him have a lap of honour, right? Let him. I mean, I don't know who's listening to this, but if you are minded to point out that once again Donald Trump has proved himself to be a massive chicken, don't do it. Don't do it, because you know he'll just start clucking someone else, won't he? So, I mean, you can't do that. And, of course, we will point out that he appears to have chickened out until he releases a Truth Social statement saying the polar opposite of the one that he released 2 minutes ago. Thank you, Taz. Guy is in Richmond. Guy, what's going on?
Yeah, hi, James. Hello. I think the taco cutting in hasn't made much difference to the fundamentals that Ash, our humble merchant seaman, told us about. You know, if we want a guide for what's going on at the moment, we only have to look at the analogue across the way that, you know, think out of the water body. Ukraine has bottled up the entire Russian Black Sea fleet with the effective use of remote control boats filled with explosives, despite being pelted daily by Russia's finest. So, you know, nothing's really changed. The only way you're going to get shipping through the Hormuz is if the Iranians and the Omanis want you to. And we mustn't forget it's two-sided, the Straits of Hormuz.
Of course.
We've got Oman equally on the other side, but Oman's not blocking anyone, of course. But it has to be the goodwill of the two people either side of the passage. And the only way out is really what the TACO has done for us. But they still retain control over it.
Which is why it is, if things stay like this, and they could have changed by the time we come off air, they could have changed by the time we finish this conversation, because Donald Trump is involved, then Iran has a much greater claim to victory than Donald Trump does, albeit that we will allow him to claim a victory, because it's a bit like giving a rusk, isn't it, to a teething toddler. and Iran, this is the bit where I hope Ash is wrong. It is in Iran's interests to return to where we were before this war started, even if their ability to trust the negotiating process with the United States or Israel or both has been destroyed beyond any recognition. It's still in their interest to return to the status quo because, you know, I mean, it's in their economic interest to have these ships passing through the Strait of Hormuz.
Sure. So, Iran has tossed the taco a rusk.
Yes.
Am I getting my taco in rusk?
No, that's correct. They've tossed the taco a rusk.
Thank you very much. And by the way, my next piece of business is Cuba. So they have bought themselves some time because he'll go on somewhere else. In the meantime, the Persian Gulf remains the Persian Gulf and under control. So I think actually our humble ash is right. You know, we need to go back to saying what are the alternative export routes for hydrocarbons out of the
things long term that anybody sensible would be looking at would be sustainables, of course, because our dependence upon fossil fuels, if it hadn't been highlighted by Ukraine, where Guy's Call began, then it's certainly been highlighted by this. But of course, the kind of people who sing the praises of Vladimir Putin and love Donald Trump are also the people who insist that we need more fossil fuels, when the only lesson you draw from an episode like this is that we should be less reliant on them, because then we can't get held hostage by events like this. And if it's not the stuff passing through the Strait of Hormuz that is teaching you a lesson, then it should be the fact that it has to pass through the Strait of Hormuz that is teaching you a lesson, which is why Guy suggests, and Ash suggested earlier, that we would need alternative routes, alternative methods of getting these goods to this island. It is coming up to 11:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. We don't do this very often because, well, frankly, and I don't want you to take this the wrong way, you normally need a little bit of time to absorb breaking news before you're ready to talk about it. Some people who do what I do for a living need to see what the Daily Mail has said about breaking news before they can even muster up an opinion of their own. But I want to know what you think about the claim by Donald Trump that it's all over now after very successful negotiations with Iran. And I'll tell you first, after the headlines with Dominic Ellis, what the reverse ferret on this is most likely to look like. If indeed we do find out that this should be ignored and isn't worth the paper that it's printed on, I think I know how that will happen. And I'll share that with you after the very latest headlines with Dominic Ellis.
Donald Trump says the United States and Iran have held talks on the complete and total resolution of hostilities in the Middle East. Posting on social media, he said as a result of the discussions, he's postponed threatened strikes on Iranian power plants for 5 days. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, is promising extra support for the Jewish community in North London after 4 ambulances were set on fire. Police are treating the attacks in Golders Green overnight as a hate crime. And 2 pilots have died after a plane crashed into a fire truck on a runway at LaGuardia Airport in New York. 76 people were on board the Air Canada flight. 41 people have been taken to hospital, some with serious injuries. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales through today. Some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Fancy a trip to France without the fancy price tag? Go all Irish. With great low prices, travel from Dover to Calais with Irish ferries and you'll have France at your feet in 90 minutes. Can-can. Less. More money, less money. You get the picture. Get a warm Irish welcome on board and a cool pint of the black stuff on us. Zero alcohol, of course, when you book direct at irishferries.com. Escargot on, then. Irish Ferries. See travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Rebel squadron attack. Pew, pew, pew. You'll never win.
John! Are you playing with the kids' Star Wars Kinder Surprise? Without them?
But I am their father.
Well, as their father, you can explain. You've opened their favourite treat.
With Kinder Surprise, you and your kids can play, explore, discover and grow together. One intergalactic adventure at a time. Pick up a Star Wars Kinder Surprise today. Also available in Easter egg size.
Let's stop there. Being a soldier, it's exciting. You already know that. What you want to know is, what's in it for me? I wanted to learn leadership skills from the experts.
I wanted to get paid to earn qualifications.
I wanted more confidence. And outlook, I'm on the radio.
That's what was in it for me.
Get skills, get qualified, get confident. Army. Recruiting now. Search Army Jobs.
Accent.
James O'Brien on LBC.
It is 33 minutes after 11. United States, according to a social media post by Donald Trump, is to hold off on the power plant strikes Donald Trump was threatening for the next 5 days, according to Donald Trump, because according to Donald Trump, in a post littered with grammatical and spelling errors, he has had constructive conversations, in-depth and detailed conversations with the Iranian regime. So the first possible reverse ferret, as I'm sure you've already spotted, is that the Iranian regime come out in the next couple of minutes and say, no, we haven't. Just pause for a moment right there. Okay, the President of the United States has made a statement about negotiations with an enemy state that they're currently at war with. And I say to you, live on LBC, a radio station you've been listening to for most of your adult life, and possibly as a child as well, when your dad had us on in the car, I say to you, there's every possibility that the Iranians will come out and say that Donald Trump is lying. And you don't raise an eyebrow. You go, yeah, of course there is. Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Thanks, James. I say, thanks, Bruce. You sent the message in. Quite a few of you did, actually. I say, oh, yeah, of course. Because, I mean, it's happened before, hasn't it? And also, who are you going to trust? The Iranians? Or Trump? I wouldn't want to choose between those two. It's not even 52-48. You might as well toss a coin. Which one of those characters is telling the truth? But there it is. That's the first reverse ferret that you might see on the horizon. The second reverse ferret that you might see on the horizon is that he'll release another statement saying Iran has let us down. And therefore, we are resuming our plans to attack them. Simon Marks is scheduled to join us at 11:45. It's always fascinating, but in the event, in the light of recent events, it's going to be even more fascinating than usual. And part of the reason... Oh, here we're crossing live now to Golders Green for the statement from the Metropolitan Police regarding the attack on those ambulances.
Overnight, and the progress of the police investigation. At around 1:45 hours today, we were called by the London Fire Brigade to report of a fire on Highfield Road, Golders Green. We attended the scene where four ambulances from Hatzola, a volunteer-led ambulance service run by members of the Jewish community, were on fire. The attack occurred in the car park of a local synagogue where Hatzola's vehicles for this area are based. Explosions were heard as oxygen canisters on board the ambulances exploded. Nearby homes were evacuated as a precaution, with 34 residents displaced and road closures put in place. Thankfully, no injuries were reported and all of the fires were safely put out. Four ambulances have been destroyed, but we understand the service remains fully operational and able to respond to emergencies. We were able to get local residents back into their homes relatively quickly, and I thank them for their patience and understanding. This arson attack is being treated as an anti-Semitic hate crime. This is a devastating incident for our Jewish communities, and we've launched an immediate investigation to identify those responsible. Our officers remain on scene to carry out urgent inquiries and to gather CCTV footage and other evidence. We believe we're looking for three suspects at this early stage. CCTV footage appears to show three people in hoods pouring accelerant onto the vehicles before igniting them and fleeing. While this has not been declared a terrorist incident at this stage, the investigation is now being led by counter-terrorism policing, with all the specialist expertise they bring and all lines of inquiry remain open. We are aware of an online claim from a group taking responsibility for this attack. Establishing the authenticity and accuracy of this claim will be a priority for the investigation team, but it is not something we can confirm at this point. There have been no arrests at this early stage, and we would urge anyone with information to please contact us as soon as possible. You can do so anonymously if you wish. We have already spoken to local community and faith leaders and will continue that work today. A specific policing plan focused on key community locations across the area is underway and will continue beyond the coming days as we move towards Passover in early April. This attack comes at a time when fears are already heightened given global events and recent attacks targeting Jewish communities in other parts of Europe. The Met Police stands shoulder to shoulder with our partners and communities. Together, we take a zero-tolerance approach to hate crime. We are stepping up our support to Jewish communities across London to engage, offer reassurance, and take practical action to protect people and property. If you have any information about what happened in Golders Green, please come forward and call the police on 101, providing the reference 415 of the 23rd of March. To remain anonymous, call the independent charity Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111. Thank you very much. I'm now going to hand over to Deputy Assistant Commissioner Paul Askew from the London Fire Brigade.
Of course, yeah. Early this morning, the London Fire Brigade control room took the first of 56 calls reporting a fire on Highfield Road in Golders Green. Upon arrival, crews were met with a well-developed fire involving four ambulances. Several cylinders stored within the vehicles exploded because of the heat, causing damage to the windows of a nearby residential block. Residents from the immediate area were evacuated to a rest centre as a precaution while crews worked to bring the incident under control. The fire was safely extinguished overnight. We understand the impact this fire will have on the local community, including our Jewish residents. The Brigade's community engagement team attended the rest centre last night to support residents that have been directly impacted by the fire. Alongside our firefighters, they will continue to work with and support the local community in the coming days. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
But the bunch of people in anxiety, those neighbours, the people are scared. The people out there are scared.
And with the time at 20 past 12, that concludes the statements by the Metropolitan Police and the London Fire Brigade with regards to the arson attack, as you heard, being treated as an anti-Semitic attack on four ambulances owned by a Jewish charity in North London. Our crime correspondent Andy Hughes is with us. I think given the speed with which that was announced, I don't know about you, mate, you've been doing this longer than I have. I was possibly, well, maybe that refutation of an online claim is the key point, but I was expecting a little bit more than that, than a kind of status report.
Yeah, well, it's entirely usual for counter-terrorism police to be brought in at a very early stage. They've now confirmed, the big headline out of that press conference is that counter-terrorism policing are now leading this investigation, although they say they have not declared it as a terror attack. However, it does tick many boxes that terror attacks have gone by in the past. Yeah, this online claim, this is being pumped out all over social media, where a group who say they are linked to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, which are not a prescribed terror group in this country, but are all over Europe, that they claimed responsibility. But as you heard from Detective Chief Superintendent Luke Williams there, they cannot confirm that this is accurate.
So it is just a watching brief then, really?
It is, yeah. And there are three suspects who were seen on CCTV approaching these ambulances. They said that accelerants were used to start the fires. And then the three suspects could be seen fleeing the area. So a manhunt is currently underway right now to track down these suspects.
And if you are listening to this programme and you do have information that may be of help to the authorities, then I would urge you to get in touch with them. You can do so via 101 and quote the reference number 415. Or if you want to maintain your own anonymity, which I don't think you'll be able to do if you ring 101, you can go through the charity Crime Stoppers, whose number is 0800 555 111. So that's 0800 555 111 for Crime Stoppers, and 101. You dial 101 and quote the reference number 415 if you want to contact the police directly. It is 11:43. So although they've discounted it at this stage, it doesn't take it off the board entirely, does it?
No, it's clearly something they're looking at. I mean, just, I know for a fact from my sources that counter-terrorism police, MI5 and MI6 have effectively been on high alert for the last month since the US invaded Iran and attacked Iran and killing the Ayatollah at the end of February. Whatever happens globally always plays out on the streets of the UK. Now, there are several suspects on the terror watch list which are linked to Iran-backed terror groups such as Hezbollah, Hamas and the IRGC. So certainly this will be one line of inquiry they'll be looking into very heavily.
And I'd also just on a personal level urge you to just steer well clear of social media at a time like this if you want to spare yourself the horrors of exaggerations, blatant lies, speculations and misinformation, which can look very persuasive, it can look very realistic, but will be rooted in fantasy and worse. So LBC probably the best place you can turn to keep a clear eye on what is and indeed what is not unfolding. Andy Hughes, our crime correspondent, thank you very much indeed. Simon Mark scheduled immediately after this. Henry Riley with us at 12:45 for what is fast becoming the most popular feature in the history of LBC Radio. That is Riley's Reform Roundup, his now daily attempt to treat Nigel Farage's outfit with something like the levels of scrutiny that are usually reserved for parties, well, every other party in the country, quite frankly. And speaking of shameful journalism, one wonders quite how the feeling over at the Daily Mail today with the fast-moving situation in the Middle East reaching sort of fever pitch, and they deciding to open their front page this morning with some absolute nonsense about Kemi Badenoch complaining that Keir Starmer didn't tell her that Tehran reportedly fired some missiles in the direction of Diego Garcia that were taken out of the sky some 400 miles shy of their target. I mean, some days you just need to double check that you're not going mad and everybody else is. But today was not one of those days. It's 11:45.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
With the crippling cost of the Middle East conflict,
calls are growing for further cost of living support as the Prime Minister chairs an emergency COBRA meeting in light of the Iran war.
An awful April just around the corner.
The industry sector itself is absolutely getting squeezed and the government must do more.
It's as tough a time as any to own a British business. The forecast is gloomy. Could help be on the way. And is it time to drill, baby drill, in the North Sea?
The government will no doubt be looking at in the Treasury at a series of options. The prices are soaring in places. This government will not accept profiteering.
At times like these, who would want to trade places with Business and Trade Secretary Peter Kyle as he takes your calls tomorrow morning from 7 in another exclusive edition of Call the Cabinet on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
It's not easy being a clump, stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself. Hi, Clampy. How's it going? Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely. Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
McGriddles, a new McDonald's breakfast. So it's maple syrup infused. It's sweet, then it's savoury. Because the sausage, you know, and the cheese and the egg. Oh, it's got the golden arches stamped on it too. Make that make sense. It's hard to put into words, but... Until 11 a.m., subject to availability, fees apply to delivery orders while stocks last.
I'm Natasha, and this is my NHS story. I went to the GP because I'd found a lump in my breast, and the GP referred me to a CDC centre. It was just really welcoming from the moment I arrived. To just be reassured all in one day was fantastic.
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
It's 11:48 at 10 o'clock this morning as I ran through a rather, oh, I don't know, I hope a diverting list of all the things that Donald Trump has said are true and untrue at the same time. I should have reminded you that at 10 o'clock this morning, the US plan was to bomb power plants in Iran. And I should have said that by 12 o'clock today or by 1 o'clock today or possibly by 11:30, the US plan will probably be not to bomb power plants in Iran. And that is indeed where we are, with the President of the United States suggesting in an illiterate, a barely literate post on social media that the resolution of hostilities in the Middle East is close to being complete and total. But in the first instance, the attacks, the mooted attacks on power plants in Iran will not go forward. I am also, like night follows day, I'm seeing some reports here that Iranian media is already reporting that there has been no direct or indirect contact with Trump, and claims, again in Iranian media, that he withdrew the threat after issuing that threat to attack West Asia energy facilities. So essentially, I think he called a 48-hour ultimatum, didn't he? And Iran appears to have either negotiated a settlement or... And again, I can't believe I'm saying this about a president of the United States of America. Iran has called his bluff and he's now lying about it. And again, I'm putting you on eyebrow watch. What did your eyebrows do then when I suggested that a president of the United States of America could quite easily have called a hostile state's bluff, I beg your pardon, have threatened a hostile state, had his bluff called, and decided that the best way out of this would be to lie about it? That's probably where I'd put my money now, but not all of it. And certainly not before I've spoken to Simon Marks in Washington, D.C. Were you probably, you were already on hold when this dropped, were you?
Well, I mean, I think that everybody that had watched what had taken place on the financial markets in Asia and in Europe over the last few hours, James, were very aware that there was a real possibility of a climb down. But the nature of this climb down, coming as it does in a message typed in all block capitals, yep, on the president's social media feed, including one particularly glorious spelling mistake, comes at a time when President Donald Trump has spent the last several days scrambling to find an off-ramp from Iran, and has issued a whole series of completely contradictory messages. On the one hand, saying we're winding down. On the other hand, issuing this ultimatum, saying that if the Iranians didn't reopen the Strait of Hormuz, he was going to bomb their energy and power plant infrastructure back to the Stone Age. Then, of course, the president saying to a reporter over the weekend, I may have a plan or I may not have a plan, when he was asked about ground troops. But that phrase immediately became a motto inadvertently for the whole of Operation Epic Fury. Now the climb down, the Tucko moment, the Trump always chickens out moment. But there are more holes in this statement than you will find in a piece of Swiss cheese, because while he says and reveals, or claims, I think we have to say, that there have been 2 days of productive, very good conversations between the United United States and Iran. He doesn't make it clear whether he's talking to the Iranian government. He simply says the country of Iran. He also doesn't make it clear if these are direct talks or whether, like the abandoned talks in Geneva, they were going through third parties. And most importantly of all, while he says that he is putting a hold on his plan to launch military strikes tonight against Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure, says he's putting that on hold for 5 days so that these talks can continue for the rest of the week, he makes no reference in this social media message to the Strait of Hormuz, which was, of course, the fundamental issue that his threat to bomb the power plants was supposed to deal with. He was calling on the Iranians to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, or he would start bombing their energy and power facilities. We don't know anything about whether the Iranians have agreed to do anything with regard to that strategic waterway from this message. So far more questions than answers. And I think the timing of this, coming as it did, just after 7 o'clock in the morning here on the East Coast, as Americans were pouring themselves a bowl of cornflakes, certainly at least here on the eastern seaboard, a couple of hours before the financial markets were about to open in New York. I think it tells you everything about the urgency with which the president wanted to avoid a set of circumstances in which the markets were going to plunge and the oil price once again was going to soar.
The markets have responded as they always do because they, for reasons I don't fully understand, they can't deploy the sort of scepticism and cynicism that you and I now do whenever Donald Trump speaks. They have to respond to what he has most recently said. And those prices, came down fairly swiftly. Some started creeping back up again, presumably as people start betting on the likelihood of a reverse ferret or an Iranian denial or even a Donald Trump sort of U-turn on the issue. So we'll watch that with interest. It also, of course, throws open the online speculation about whether Donald Trump is motivated by manipulation of the markets. But I think we can probably leave that alone for now. Just take us back with a reminder that not everybody pays as close attention to things as you do, as about that desperation for an off ramp. Why do you use that phrase, Simon?
Well, because it's because he's naked as a jaybird as an emperor in the Oval Office. I mean, because we have all completely realised, I mean, I think, you know, many of us already suspected it, but we've all completely realised over the last week that there was no strategic plan, there were no adequate preparations made by the Pentagon with regard to arguably what was always going to be the most critical piece of Iran's response to this joint US and Israeli military reaction, namely its capacity essentially to control the price of oil by controlling traffic that transited through the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, you've seen Monday morning quarterbacking taking place here by people like former National Security Advisor John Bolton saying, I can't believe they didn't have a plan for the Strait of Hormuz. But it is evident that there was no plan at all. He's been rejected roundly by his allies in Asia, by his NATO allies, with the singular exception of the increasingly extraordinary character of the NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, who took to television here this weekend and urged American voters, that was the phrase that he used, American voters, to rally around the president and to understand what kind of benefits this military action in Iran was going to be bringing them. I mean, an extraordinary position for the NATO Secretary General to be taking while governments across Europe were saying, you know what, mate, you and Benjamin Netanyahu created this mess. You guys need to clean it up. But the contradictions and the anger that we've seen exhibited through the president's statements, his social media postings, and when he's spoken to reporters in person. I mean, he was telling one reporter on the phone this weekend that NATO was about to get its comeuppance, whatever that means. I mean, all of this, I think, revealed not just a desperation on his part to try and find an out from a military conflict that he expected was going to be done and dusted in 2 or 3 days, Venezuela style. But as I know you were raising on the program last week, it also raises some pretty fundamental questions about where he is mentally. I mean, he has appeared, I mean, there's no way of not focusing on it, he has appeared to be deranged over the course of the last week. And, you know, if it was any other president acting in this way, everybody would openly be saying the emperor has no clothes. And there is still a desire, I think, on the part particularly of the media in this country to bend over backwards and find adjectives and descriptives to sort of explain away some of his most bizarre behavior. The New York Times last week was saying that in that inflammatory comment about Pearl Harbor in front of the Japanese leader, he had needled the Japanese leader, which is a wonderfully anodyne way of describing what took place in the Oval Office. There is a reality here. I mean, his behavior is deeply unpredictable, as we've seen just within the last few minutes.
And it's not, I know you know this, but it's not confined to your side of the Atlantic, Simon. We've got plenty of people over here who'll give the biggest sycophants in the US media a run for their money in this country, and dare I say it, occasionally even in this studio. But a word, if you would, on the US media and the consensus on how this happened, because I think that he was told, this is what I understand, that Hormuz would do what Hormuz has done. And he thought either that he'd sort of somehow be immune from reality or that it would all be over. This reminded me slightly of Putin and Ukraine. It would all be over so quickly that none of these potential repercussions would apply, or just that he put his fingers in his ears and decided to press ahead anyway because he's Donald Trump and, as he keeps telling us, he can do whatever he wants.
But this is what happens, James, when you create a government and you fill it totally with sycophantic loyalists. There is no one in the room who puts their hand up and says, Mr. President, before we do this, could we just have a chat about the possible various outcomes here? I mean, we do know that Vice President J.D. Vance briefly counseled against this military adventurism. It's very unclear what position General Dan Raisin Kane, as Donald Trump likes to call him, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff took. But when you see, you know, these sycophants like Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, as president styles him, and various others within his entourage, you can see that there is no one there. Mike Waltz, the now U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, the former national security advisor, fully aligned behind Donald Trump's strategy this weekend. Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, imagine being in his shoes, having to deal with the roiling nature of the financial markets and worrying about the price of oil and what it's doing for the long-term prospects of Republican candidates in November's presidential election. But he was fully on board on American TV this weekend. There's no one there that can stand up and say, you are honestly walking around starkers, mate, and you should do yourself a favor and try and save yourself from yourself. And so he finds himself in this position.
Can you stop conjuring up images of a naked Donald Trump? I'm getting complaints. That's twice you've done it now in the space of one hit.
So he finds himself in a position where he's got to find a way out, but he doesn't know what it is, and he's got to find a way out at a time when the Iranians are ratcheting up pressure on him and saying, if you attack our power plants, we're going to... I mean, let's not forget, James, they managed to fly two missiles just within the last few days in the direction of Diego Garcia, a greater range of ballistic missiles than were previously known to be in their arsenal, at a time when the President of the United States says their ballistic missiles have been completely destroyed and obliterated twice,
actually, because they were completely obliterated 9 months ago as well. It's easy to forget that. And then, of course, they were completely obliterated again last week. But lo and behold, they're still firing them. Simon, thank you. Are you busy for the next hour? Because we may need to come to you to discuss
the
polar opposite of what we've just been discussing, when Donald Trump comes out and says he never said the thing he's just said and that he's actually going to start bombing power plants tomorrow. There's a senator called Tillis who was giving an interview that I think sums up quite a lot of the stuff that you've just been telling us. We'll have a little listen to that, I suspect, after this. Until then, Simon Marks, thank you.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, President Trump says the United States and Iran have held talks on the complete resolution of hostilities in the Middle East. Posting on social media, he said as a result, he's postponed threatened strikes on Iranian power plants for 5 days. LBC's Washington correspondent Simon Marks has been reading the statement.
He called the discussions very good and productive, said they will continue all week and are aimed at securing what he called a possible total resolution of hostilities in the Middle East. He says as a result, he has ordered the Pentagon to abandon his threatened attacks on Iranian power plants and energy infrastructure that were expected to begin tonight, a move he was planning to take unless the Iranians reopened the Strait of Hormuz.
Separately, Keir Starmer is due to chair an emergency COBRA meeting this afternoon to discuss the economic impact of the war in Iran. Police say they're searching for three suspects after four ambulances belonging to a Jewish community charity were set on fire in North London. The attack in Golders Green overnight is being treated as a hate crime. No injuries have been reported. Detective Chief Superintendent Luke Williams has given this update.
While this has not been declared a terrorist incident at this stage, the investigation is now being led by counter-terrorism policing, with all the specialist expertise they bring and all lines of inquiry remain open. We are aware of an online claim from a group taking responsibility for this attack. Establishing the authenticity and accuracy of this claim will be a priority for the investigation team.
Two pilots have died after a plane collided with a fire truck on a runway at LaGuardia Airport in New York. 76 people were on board the Air Canada flight. 41 people have been taken to hospital, some with serious injuries. Major changes to short-term prison sentences have come into force in England and Wales. The reforms mean most offenders that would have spent up to a year in jail will instead receive a suspended sentence. The changes are part of efforts to ease prison overcrowding. And the first person has been charged with entering a football match without a ticket. A 27-year-old man is accused of tailgating at the EFL Cup final at Wembley yesterday. The laws came into force on Sunday. Benjamin Bailey from Oldham in Manchester will appear in court in May. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 55 points at 9,971. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales through today. Some outbreaks of rain for the north of Scotland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Did you know a new traffic-free Oxford Street is coming? This year, the Mayor of London will begin to pedestrianise London's flagship high street, creating more space for everyone.
That means soon you could be hearing less.
Excuse me, coming through.
And more. A bit less.
Come on! Sorry.
And plenty of. To find out more, search Oxford Street Transformation.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 5 minutes after 12, and here it is. Iran's Fars News Agency, affiliated with Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard, has quoted an unnamed Iranian source as saying there is, and I quote, no direct or indirect contact with Trump. So I mentioned that to you about 5 minutes ago as a possibility, about 3 minutes ago as something that was being reported, but I couldn't find the source, and now we have it sourced, thanks to the senior reporter at BBC Persian, who presumably has the Farsi that neither me, Eleanor, nor Keith are currently fluent in. So we rely on others sometimes for what... No, you're not, Keith. Don't, go on then, say something in Persian. A little Farsi. no indirect or direct contact with Trump, despite Donald Trump claiming that they've been having very deep and meaningful conversations. The source added that after, quotes, hearing that our targets would include all power stations in West Asia, he backed down. Now, we can't look away from that, and neither would I want to look away from this. But I find myself, should you care, in a bit of a pickle. Because we have a list, as you know, and Ukraine would be the best example of this, of august experts to whom we can turn. We also, in recent years, have developed a frankly astonishing coterie of callers, a collection of contributors who, in my humble opinion, and in yours, and you may not be as humble as me, generally produce better quality contributions to this programme than other radio stations pay people to make. Some of the people who have helped us in recent weeks with the situation in in Iran. And I guess we'd put Ash in Northampton very, very much on that list today. We spoke to Mike in Greenwich on Friday, former US diplomat Mark Riley down in Brighton, a lifelong student of US politics. Some people are involved in the world that they describe. Some people are merely experts about the world that they describe. And then we have the pros. So we would turn to Professor this or Professor that when discussing what's been going on in Ukraine and what is likely to happen next. And although I don't reach for guests anywhere near as often as I could do, because I genuinely would rather either carry on talking myself or listen to you in no particular order, when we book a guest, we really value them. But there's no point booking any guests. So beyond another journalist like Simon, who can simply relay to us what is going on, as in what has happened, as in what Donald Rumsfeld might call the known knowns, speculation or expert analysis of what is going on now is actually pointless. I know it feels sometimes as if I labour this point unduly, but I cannot exaggerate to you how unprecedented it is. So we really like the Professor of War Studies, don't we, over at King's University, and we really like Phillips O'Brien up at St Andrews. And if we're talking about Ukraine, I wasn't thinking of Lawrence Friedman. We really like him as well. I was thinking of Anthony King, but I can't remember where he struts his academic stuff. And we have a small but brilliant contacts book on this programme of people who are incredibly helpful. But I think they'd be the first to admit that they can't make head nor tail of this, because it could be the opposite in 10 seconds' time of what it was 10 seconds ago. So Donald Trump says, and the pickle that I'm in is that sometimes when there's no obvious phone-in to be had, I can entertain you and illuminate you with my own attempts at analysing what's going on and then enlist a couple of experts to help. But you can't do that here, because you cannot be an expert on Donald Trump's current position. Nobody can be an... Even Donald Trump doesn't know what Donald Trump is talking about. So how on earth can you book someone now to come on and talk about what Donald Trump is talking about? Because Donald Trump doesn't know what Donald Trump is talking about. All I can tell you is that Donald Trump claims that he spent 2 days having very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of hostilities in the Middle East with the country of Iran, while the government of Iran has let it be known via the media of Iran that they haven't even sent each other a postcard. There has been no direct or indirect contact. Other things that you know include the claim that there was a 48-hour deadline in place for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, otherwise he would start bombing power plants in Iran. To which Iran responded by saying, well, we'll stop bombing power plants all over West Asia. So you have what could be loosely described as an impasse. You have a deadlock. Donald Trump saying, I will do such things, what they are, I know not, but they shall be the terror of the earth. And Iran saying, well, we'll bomb that, we'll bomb this, and we'll bomb that. Because guess what, Taco? When you claimed that you'd completely obliterated our abilities to launch attacks 9 months ago, you were lying. And when you claimed it last week, you were lying. And when you claimed it the week before that, you were lying. Because look, we're still launching attacks, and we've still got the Strait of Hormuz by the proverbial short and curlies. So, they called his bluff. He said, you've got 48 hours to do what I want. And they didn't do it. So he's announced that they've negotiated a settlement, and they've announced that they haven't been talking to him at all. And you may, over the course of the last 3 weeks, thought on occasions that I was exaggerating just how mad all of this is. And just how utterly, utterly thankless it is to attribute any inkling of sense or sensibility or normality to Donald Trump. The idea that he spent 2 days negotiating with Iran instead of playing golf is obviously laughable from the get-go. But if you thought I was exaggerating about how unutterably bonkers this whole thing is, this man is, was it the beginning of last week or the beginning of the week before that we went in on deranged liar? Why does everybody else insist on pretending that he's not a deranged liar? The only way you can report on this stuff is by acknowledging the derangement and the lies. He is a deranged liar. And therefore, everything he does needs to be viewed through the lens of his deranged lies. which means that when I said to you at 11:45, here's what he's just said, I wouldn't be surprised if the Iranians come out in the next 2 minutes and say he hasn't been speaking to us, Gov. And the Iranians came out in the next 2 minutes and said he hasn't been speaking to us, Gov. So who's an expert on this? Do you see what I mean? Ash in Northampton, an expert on the Strait of Hormuz, on what getting the mines out of there it would look like and how feasible it is to actually reopen it using military force. Someone has made Donald Trump realise that, as Ash explained on this programme, maybe he's listening. He heard Ash. Ash in Northampton has just essentially taken the world back from the precipice of World War III because he has persuaded the president, I'm joking, but someone has persuaded the president, presumably the same arguments that Ash in Northampton was using, that he can't do this. He can't bully and bludgeon his way to reopening the Strait of Hormuz, short of undertaking a military operation in Iran that would make Iraq look like a cakewalk. He would have to absolutely obliterate the current regime. And there's no earthly way the American people, let alone his own base, which were promised he wouldn't be starting wars in the Middle East, could stomach that. So what are his options? I've made a threat. 48 hours to do what I want. Otherwise, I will do such things. They will be the terror of the... thank you to everybody who picked up on that King Lear quote. I got more King Lear news for you later this hour. Well, I may have. It's a bit personal. That's where he's been left. You do what I want, you've got 48 hours to do it, and if you don't do it, whoa, they're going to be the biggest bombs you've ever... And then they don't do it. So there he is now. What are my choices? I can launch the attacks that won't work. I can claim that we've negotiated a settlement, even though the other person will accuse me of lying. I'm constantly being accused of lying when I'm lying, and my base lets me lie. He could say, there's a guy in London, works for the Daily Mail, he thinks I should be the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. He's never been more ashamed to be British that Keir Starmer didn't get involved in this war. So there are some people who will not just let me lie. They will claim that I'm the King of the Hill, even as I'm lying to them. Option number two, lie. Option number one, launch the attack. Option number two, lie. I don't think there's an option number three, do you? Is there an option number three? 03456060973. What do you think has happened here? Working on the premise that, and probably foolishly, but nonetheless, perhaps we have no choice, we work on the premise that the current state of affairs will stay in place for the rest of the hour, or at least until 12:45 when Henry Reilly gets here with Reilly's reform roundup. So the current state of affairs is this. Donald Trump pledged to attack Iran if they didn't reopen the Strait of Hormuz within 48 hours. Point one. Point two, they didn't. Point three, he has announced that they have negotiated a ceasefire on that particular front. Point four, Iran says they haven't. That's your 4 points, I think. That's it. What do you think has happened? 03456060973. What do you think has happened here? And Donald Trump has backed down on his threat and claimed a negotiated settlement that the other party in the mooted negotiations denies ever took place. What do you think has happened here? And remember, I can't book experts, so your opinion is as valid as anybody's. I don't know, and I'm happy to have a long queue of people saying he's chickened it, he's bottled it, he's walked away, he's pooped his pants. If that's the only available explanation, I want to hear it in your words, not just in mine. But what has happened here? Justify or explain the miscalculation. How could somebody as powerful as this has ended up with so much egg on his face? If you don't do what I want in 48 hours, I will launch these attacks. They didn't do what he wanted. He didn't launch the attacks. He instead claimed a negotiated ceasefire that the other party to the negotiation says has never taken place. So the question couldn't really be simpler. What do you think has happened? And I tell you what, if I was Keir Starmer, I would be, well, if I was Keir Starmer's head of communications, I would be looking very seriously at the claim that Keir Starmer's talked him out of it and talked him down. But I don't know. What do you think? Remember, there's no experts on this. No one can tell you. All we can do is speculate. And we can do it together. Hit the numbers now. You will get through. 03456060973. Who's going to be first to deploy Occam's razor? Because the simplest explanation is usually the correct one. What has happened here? How has this... make some sense of this almighty mess, if you think you can. It's 12:17.
This is LBC.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia, and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her life. And we will all need help to find a cure to end the devastation of dementia. I can't do this alone.
It will take a society to beat dementia. Alzheimer's Society.
With over 50 years' experience, Fidelity can help you feel confidently invested. Make the most of your annual allowances by the 5th of April with our expert insights, excellent service, and wealth of investment options. For ISAs, pensions, or advice, go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Did you know a new traffic-free Oxford Street is coming? This year, the Mayor of London will begin to pedestrianise London's flagship high street, creating more space for everyone. That means soon you could be hearing less.
Excuse me, coming through.
And more. A bit less.
Come on! Sorry.
And plenty of. To find out more, search Oxford Street Transformation.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:18 is the time. It might be that it's actually one of the easiest questions I've ever asked you. What on earth has happened here? How has the President of the United States gone in the space of minutes, or at least hours, from claiming that he was going to visit the terrors of the earth on the Iranian regime if they didn't do what he wanted, and then claiming that he's negotiated some sort of peace with them when they didn't do what he wanted, and then presumably staying silent for the rest of the day when they come out in increasing numbers to say, we ain't negotiated nothing. Go on, make some sense of it, if you think you can. Geraint is in Chester to kick things off. Geraint, what would you like to say?
Good morning or good afternoon, James. First of all, before I start, I just wanted to thank the Countess of Chester Ambulance and Medical Services. They saved my life back in January. I owe them all, and I wanted to say that on live TV. So,
well, second best thing, you're on live radio.
Yes. But,
anyway. And I'm very glad to hear it as well. I mean, that is, what was wrong with you? Did you have a heart attack or
I had an epileptic fit in my bathroom, and I woke up, and then I was on the floor, and basically I'd smashed my hip in several places. I was basically lying on my bathroom floor for 9 hours before I was discovered, because I couldn't move.
Good Lord.
And so I'm still recovering to this day at the moment, although I'm at home. They saved my life.
I'm very happy for you to have availed yourself. You took me a little bit by surprise there, Gawain. I cannot lie. But I'm delighted to be the conduit through which you offer your congratulations to the Countess of Chester. Is that the name of the ambulance you were in, or the hospital?
The hospital.
It's not the actual Countess who found you on the bathroom floor. I don't know why I've got images of that song by Shaggy coming into my head at this point. You were not on the bathroom floor with the Countess of Chester. That was the name of the hospital to which you were taken by ambulance, where they saved your life. So thank you and congratulations to all involved. Now, to less serious matters.
To less serious matters, I mean, I can't say that this is accurate. This is just speculation on my part. But it feels like Trump is playing the markets. He's manipulating the markets. He gets this out American time, about 7 o'clock before the markets open. And then he's got a 5-day deadline, which just so happens to be when the markets close again. So if he does attack, it'll be after the markets close. And he's just been playing them, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I think not that long ago, I was allergic to both dead cats and conspiracy theories, and this is close to a conspiracy theory, but it is Donald Trump we're talking about, so no bets are off, are they? Anything is possible. Crude So the rates are rallying, equity futures are spiking. This isn't a ceasefire. It is simply an announcement that one thing mooted to happen isn't going to happen, albeit that he's talked about the possibility of a complete and total resolution of our hostilities. But the markets respond like the markets respond. Somebody makes a ton of money and some people lose a ton of money. I don't know that I'd bet my house on it, mate, to be honest with you.
No, I could be wrong. It was just an idea. It was just the timing of it. Like, oh, 5 days. Oh, he's got that out just before the markets open. And I'm very well prepared to be wrong. It was an idea, that's all.
That's all we're after. I mean, this is the nature of vacuums. As I've said many times on this programme, when a vacuum is created, absolutely anything can move into it. I mean, what would a Trump loyalist say at this point? Should we see if we can get Dick Littlejohn on the line? I mean, what would a Trump sycophant, what would somebody who's disappeared so far up Donald Trump's backside have to say about this? Is it not a humiliating climb down? It's a glorious victory. What I love about Trump sycophants is that whatever they say now will become wrong or redundant in about an hour. So they say now, oh, he's the best. He's the greatest negotiator ever. He's managed to bring us back. He's best. I wish he was in charge. Down with Keir Starmer. And then Donald Trump will come out and say, oh, that wasn't true, that thing I said yesterday that you all said was brilliant. And then the sycophants become liars. It's like being a racist. You become a liar the minute you become a sycophant. You become a liar the minute you become a racist. And Donald Trump, of course, is surrounded by sycophants and racists. But what would a Trump loyalist say about this? He's negotiated with Iran, but Iran say that he hasn't. Ah, but you can't trust what Iran says. To be honest with you, I don't trust what Iran says, but I don't trust what Donald Trump says either. So who the hell are you going to believe? And how have we in the West ended up in a place where we are treating the ludicrous US regime and the hideous Iranian regime as being equally untrustworthy? I do not know. But what I want to know is what you think has happened here. Let me run you through that statement on Truth Social just an hour or so ago. And I'm going to read it as it's written, because there's a mistake in the third word. This is where the other thing that moves into the vacuum becomes pertinent, and the possibility of not just being deranged, but genuinely medical dementia being part of the problem now. I am pleased to report, if you're going to write something like this, you'd have thought you'd have not made any major mistakes until about halfway through it. To have a massive syntactical error in the third word of the statement speaks to me of something quite serious. If it was Joe Biden, they probably would have carted him away by now. I am pleased to report that the United States of America and the country of Iran have had over the last 2 days very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East. Based on the tenor and tone of these in-depth, detailed and constructive conversations, it's the rule of three. I wonder if you know he's lying because he's trying so hard to prove that he isn't. So he's talking about conversations that didn't take place. How would a very basic liar try to cover up the fact that the conversations he's talking about didn't take place? Answer, detail. You just make the add as much pile as much detail onto the false claim as you can. So then it becomes this. Based on the tenor and tone of these in-depth, detailed and constructive conversations, which definitely took place and which, spelt wrong, spelt like a wicked witch, will continue throughout the week, I have instructed the Department of War to postpone any and all military strikes against Iranian power plants and energy structure for a 5-day period, subject to the success of the ongoing meetings and discussions. I think the line that's missing is the one that I just said out loud. The line that is missing from this is the line, which most definitely took place and I am definitely not lying about. I mean, you can read that between the lines, right? The tenor and tone of these in-depth, detailed and constructive conversations, which definitely took place. When Iran say they didn't, and who are you going to trust? Trump or Iran? I mean, I wouldn't want to make that call. Rachel's in Wigan. Rachel, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'm really sorry. I also hate dead cats and conspiracy theories, but I'm afraid I've got another one.
Go on, then.
I was trying to think of why on earth a person would say they were in negotiations for a ceasefire or in ceasefire while they negotiate, if they are not. And I've come up with an idea.
Yeah,
potentially,
go on.
Could Trump be doing this so that he can... So, for example, if he says, I'm in negotiations with Iran, we're not going to hit them, and then Iran hits the US or send off a missile...
Well, that's not going to happen.
They're acting in bad faith, you see. If Iran now strikes anything, they're acting in bad faith because the US have told everybody that they're in talks, they're in ceasefire. So then his retaliation to that seems justified to the world, or more justified than it would be otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, do you know what you're doing? You're making a mistake I made until about 3 months ago.
Thinking he's clever.
Well, applying logic, bringing in some semblance of logic when trying to unravel whatever it is that the ludicrous man-child has done most recently. And also, even if he was a logical president doing what you've described, it wouldn't quite work because Iran was threatening to attack power plants in West Asia in retaliation to the power plants he was threatening to attack. So if he doesn't attack them, then that retaliation gets taken off the board. The big question now is what happens to the Strait of Hormuz, whether it reopens or not.
Well, anything's possible at the moment, isn't it?
That's what everybody will be watching. Anything is possible. And I have to keep checking the wires and checking the time, Rachel, to make sure that the situation hasn't completely reversed, not just changed. You're doing breaking news on the radio. You're always keeping an eye on the possibility that things will change. But to keep your eye on the possibility that what was true 10 minutes ago is completely untrue now is territory that none of us are familiar with. Earlier mistakes have been corrected. It is 27 minutes after 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Michelle is in New Jersey. Ah, there we go. Michelle, what do you reckon?
Hi, James. I don't trust anything that Donald Trump says, and I think that he's not being truthful. It's a Monday, so I'm being kind with my words right now because I haven't had the week of his ridiculous behavior to kind of set in. And if I was Iran, I wouldn't really trust the United States. That sounds crazy, but they've been in negotiations.
It sounds crazy if anyone has a sort of historical context that goes back further than 18 right. months. But I mean that genuinely. And pre-second term Trump, the idea that you'd be cautioning Iran not to trust America would sound ridiculous. But now, I mean, they were on the brink of signing a settlement that would have essentially nixed the enrichment of uranium. Everybody involved in those negotiations was confident they were going well. Whether or not Witkoff and Kushner misled President Trump, whether they didn't understand what they were negotiating, because they both have a background in real estate, not in uranium. Iran was about to do it, and then they bombed them anyway. So they're not going to trust anybody here again.
Exactly. And Jared Kushner is like lining his pockets with money, as is Trump. The United States has done this twice where, you know, to your point, they've been in negotiations and then bombed. So like, why would they trust them? And if I was Iran, not that I'm advising Iran, but I would probably hold out until there's a real economic impact to the United States, because right now gas prices are going up. But we used to be able to rely on like the moral compass of the United States. That's no longer. I mean, that's gone away with the fact that like they bombed a school.
Yeah.
You know,
on day
like,
one.
So
on
there's
day
not
one.
The moral. Yeah, exactly. So there's not this moral compass where we're like, oh, okay, like that's not wrong. So now it's just you have to rely on like the economic impact to, you know, the United States for anything to like really change.
Yeah, beautifully put. And I guess we just sit here now and wait for the midterms in the bigger picture and wait for the next reverse ferret in terms of the smaller picture. Because, do you think he's bottled it on this occasion? Do you think whether or not he's lying about negotiations, and it looks like he is, but that, of course, involves trusting the Iranians, believing the Iranians. The only real explanation of this rowback that fits at the moment is that he's chickened out again.
He has, and he, this is what I was telling your producer, is that I feel that he relies on the fact that he's kind of hobbled the United States press. So it's not a situation where he's going to be getting these hard questions and get fact-checked in terms of like, well, who did you talk to? Well, who was part of these negotiations? Was it Marco Rubio?
That's a great point.
Like, who was in the room?
Just prove it. No one is going to say, prove it. Prove that you've had negotiations.
Nope, exactly. Nobody's going to question him, because what he does, he will, who are you with? oh, you're with CNN, this is fake news, blah, blah, blah. So they either have to have their station be berated or themselves be personally attacked. And he relies on the fact that, like, nobody wants to go through that. They don't want their access to the press corps to be jeopardized. So he relies on the fact that he's not going to be questioned. Even when he gets, like, the gender of, like, president's
the president
wrong,
of Ireland.
Nobody says, got like, the gender wrong,
made his comments about
right,
Pearl
that's
Harbor.
Not a man, that's a woman. Like, yeah. If, to your point, if that had been Joe Biden, it would have been, like, crazy coverage. But here's another point. If that had been Kamala, or if that had been President Obama, we had to go through months of coverage because President Obama wore a tan suit.
This is true.
And it was like, oh, come on, it's unpresidential, you know? But now, even, like, he does so much stuff that even, like, the most egregious behavior, like what he said about the death of Robert Mueller this weekend, he said, oh, good, I'm glad he's dead.
You took the words out of my mouth.
Shocking.
Well, that proves your point, because we do a pretty good job, I hope, on this program of keeping as abreast as we can of the latest aberrations and the latest egregious behavior. And it's,
you do a great job.
Well, we do our
this
best.
This is why I'm calling from America.
Well, that's
no,
a great compliment.
You do a masterful job. Yeah,
but it's 12:30, Michelle, here in the UK, and I haven't mentioned Robert Mueller yet. I haven't mentioned, because there's so much else to get through before you get through that. We barely mentioned the comments about Pearl Harbor last week, and when we did, we were a bit late, because how do you keep up with it? How do you stay on top of it all? But the Robert Mueller comments are absolutely off the charts.
They're terrible. They're absolutely terrible. In the United States, there's a saying, I don't know if it, like, goes around, but it's the spaghetti against the wall, where you throw the spaghetti up, and then it's like, what is sticking to the wall?
Yeah.
And that's what it is with Donald Trump. He does so much stuff just that impacts Americans on a local level, but it's not nationally newsworthy, you know, in terms of how he's impacting our education system, the amount of money that we can borrow just to go to college and, you know, educate our children. He's limited that. And all of the stuff with ICE that he's doing, and it's really not about security of our borders. What it really is, and what I just, like, I think that should be looked into is look at the people that own these facilities. They're all Trump supporters.
Yeah, and they're making a ton of money.
Air travel to get to these facilities. It's a money grab. And so this really isn't about, you know, how he's securing the American borders. All of this stuff, what he's doing with the education system, he wants to privatize the school system because his friends own all of these charter schools, you know, so it's a benefit to him.
And he doesn't think there's anything wrong with this. Is the thing that we miss, is, you know, you see it with law. They genuinely don't think the law should apply to them. So they don't think that this is grift. This is literally what you do. You get into a position of power, you use it to enrich yourself and your friends. Whether you want to draw parallels with the mafia or whether you want to draw parallels with historical regimes, corrupt regimes, fascist regimes, it is literally what you do. And we still sit here like sweet summer children, Michelle, being shocked and disgusted and surprised by it. When, if we can learn any lessons from history, it's when men like this end up in positions like this, things like this happen. And you've reminded me of something else. And not just the Robert Mueller thing, which I will share with people after the news headlines. And I'd remind you of the killing of Charlie Kirk and how that was reacted to by people in the United States, and wonder where they are now when it comes to what Trump has said about the death of Robert Mueller, a war hero, a decorated war hero. But Donald Trump said on Friday that they were having a hard time negotiating because there was nobody left to talk to. I quote him verbatim. We're having a hard time. We want to talk to them and there's nobody to talk to. We have nobody to talk to. That subtext of that being that they'd killed all of Iran's leadership, and so there was nobody there with the power or the status to conduct negotiations. That was on Friday. On Monday, he claims that he's been negotiating with the country, the entire country, which might just involve shouting at a map. But he's gone in the space of 3 days from saying there's nobody there to negotiate with to saying that we've been having massive, wide-ranging and hugely successful negotiations with the country that I said on Friday didn't have anybody that we could negotiate with. I don't think I'm going to say it anymore. I've said it a lot lately. If you think I exaggerate, you can't anymore, can you? Nobody can. Michelle's not exaggerating. I'm not exaggerating. So, well, I am, however, very, very late for the news with Tim Humphrey.
Donald Trump says the US and Iran have held talks to end the conflict in the Middle East. The US president says the talks were complete and productive. He's postponed threatened strikes on Iranian power plants. An Iranian man and a woman from Romania are due in court after two people tried to enter the home of Britain's nuclear deterrent. The pair are accused of attempting to get into the Faslane naval base in western Scotland. The health secretary admits anti-Semitism is alive and kicking in our country after four Jewish ambulances were set on fire in North London overnight. Police are searching for three suspects who could be seen on CCTV torching the vehicles, which belong to a voluntary Jewish community group in Golders Green. LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales, outbreaks of rain for northern Scotland, and a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
At Lloyds, we love that moment a dream becomes a reality. Like for Steve, he's slowly packing his belongings into a small box. A framed photo of his grandchildren, a pot plant that could do with some water, a mug that reads, "Happy Retirement, Steve." As he waits for the lift one last time, he feels lighter, happier. At Lloyds, we've been asking the nation about their dreams. That's how we know Steve's story and thousands of others just like it. We've been backing the nation's aspirations for 250 years. So when it's time to realise your dreams, we're ready when you are. Bank on Lloyds.
Take Irish Ferries from Dover to Calais, where your pet travels in the pet lounge. You'd be barking not to. Irish Ferries. See travel differently.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen? It's not working. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:39. So, I mean, just by way of an illustration of what... I mean, this guy, to be fair to him, has criticised the comments that Donald Trump made about the death of Robert Mueller. Robert Mueller, former director of the FBI, who investigated the ties between Donald Trump and Russia. His family announced on Saturday, "With deep sadness, we are sharing the news that Bob passed away." Donald Trump took to social media to write, and you may not be aware of this because, as Michelle just reminded us, it's almost impossible to keep up. "Robert Mueller just died. Good. I'm glad he's dead. He can no longer hurt innocent people." I don't know if you remember the hand-wringing that unfolded when Charlie Kirk was killed and the claims that people... on the other side of the aisle from Donald Trump were not being suitably respectful, including in my own relatively trivial case. I got some criticism for playing out tapes of Charlie Kirk talking. It wasn't someone who'd beeped particularly loudly on my radar before he was killed, so I wanted to find out a little bit more about him. So we played out literally some of the things he'd said, and people got very cross with me. I still don't really understand why. Well, except for the obvious explanation that you're getting cross with yourself. Not me, because that's the guy that, that you're mourning. But these are the things that he said. And those are the people who have had nothing to say about Donald Trump literally celebrating the death of a war hero, the death of an American war hero. And that 448-page report, which many felt didn't go far enough, laid out in black and white the substantial contacts between the Trump campaign and Russia. He also laid out details of Trump's probably illegal efforts to seize control of the entire investigation and even shut it down. I mean, just a very, very well-respected American hero. a 2001 terrorist attacks on the US and its aftermath, saw the FBI that he was leading undertake a sort of revolution in terrorist pursuit. And he was also a Vietnam veteran. And when he died, I think he won the Purple Heart, won all sorts of medals. And when he died, Donald Trump said, good, I'm glad he's dead. Anyway, Tom Tillis, who is a Republican senator, found it within himself to criticise those comments by Donald Trump with regard to Robert Mueller's death. But here's the problem, is that if you have signed up for this campaign, you have sold your credibility on the altar of your Donald Trump worship. So forget about the pathetic British journalists and political figures who have done that, and you can pick your favourite. Kemi Badenoch, probably the most obvious. Nigel Farage, the most egregious. Dick Littlejohn in the Daily Mail, the most ridiculous. But it happens to everybody. Everybody who hitches themselves to the Donald Trump bandwagon can wave goodbye to credibility and integrity and end up sounding like this, Senator Tom Tillis.
But can I press you a little bit on this question of the president's responsibility for this? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was Donald Trump who put Kristi Noem in charge of the Department of Homeland Security, who has given Stephen Miller the authority that he has. Mm-hmm. It was Donald Trump who first talked about wanting to acquire Greenland for the United States. These are his policies and the people he chose to execute them. Doesn't the buck stop with him?
No, I still think that it goes back to the advice that they're getting. And if one person can't convince the president, then you get some of the other people together. You know, with respect to noms, you know, most of the time the president's probably not going, this is my list of noms, go figure out which one you want. People are bringing forth noms to him. I wouldn't expect him to have an encyclopedic knowledge of all the people that he's put forward. Again, I go back to who was responsible for actually putting forth Kristi Noem as a nom. What was that process about? Now, I don't have any problem with Kristi Noem the person, but it was clear to me that no one should have said that experience she had as governor or the brief period of time that she was a House member qualified her to run such an enormously complex and consequential organization as the Department of Homeland Security and FEMA. So I'm just saying more people around him need to say, guys, we got to look at this in terms of the probability of her being successful. And it could have, you could have helped her from herself, because I took no pleasure in the criticism that I put her way a couple of weeks ago in the hearing, but every single bit of it was substantiated in facts.
Incredible. That's Jonathan Carr from ABC News asking questions that I'd like to hear some other members of the Donald Trump fan club asked. How much responsibility does he bear for his decisions? Answer, none. Answer, none. Downing Street have welcomed Donald Trump's latest announcement. I'm not putting this on the prediction list because I don't want to spoil my 100% record. I would not be surprised if Starmer has played a role in persuading Donald Trump that he was on a hiding to nothing here. And not least because I've been reading the Chilcot checklist since I got it laminated. Downing Street have said any reports of productive talks are welcome. God, that's diplomatic. And that Number 10 has, quotes, always said that a swift resolution to the war is in global interests, but added the Strait of Hormuz specifically needs to be reopened. Daniel is in Croydon to answer the question of what we think happened today. Daniel, what have you got?
Hello there.
Hello, mate.
I am a British-Iranian man, and I followed the entire story for the last few months.
Yes.
I just personally think penny finally dropped.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump has realised he can't just go in and change regime by bombing the country. He went in claiming the help is on his way. He went in, he'd done what he believed he was right thing to do, and I personally supported him. But now he realised, well, I wanted
the regime removed, and you believed that he might be telling the truth when he said that's what he was trying to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Having said
that was your first mistake. And I fully understand it. I'd have been the same if I was Iranian. I want to be clear about that.
Having said that, it's been 47 years this regime has prepared for this.
Mm.
They're not just going to go away by bombing the country.
No.
And this is it. And I think he just realized, well, there's not that much I can do unless I put a boot on the ground, which I don't think that's going to get through. And at the same time, he could be lying. And also, look at the Iranian side, the Fars News, which is the propaganda media for the government. You know, they have to answer to the Revolutionary Guards as well. So they're not really
Well, go on then, because you're in a much more qualified position than I am. I'm going to order you. I'm going to insist that you tell me who you trust more in this very specific moment. Donald Trump says, do this in 48 hours or we'll bomb that. And they don't. They don't accept his threat. That's the, or at least they haven't done the thing he said they had to do. Then he announces negotiations have secured a ceasefire. They say there have been no negotiations. Who do you believe? The propaganda outlet or the American president?
I might be roasted on this, but I can... I'll put my money on Donald Trump.
You think he's telling the truth now?
Yes,
right. So on Friday, he said there is no one to negotiate with. We've killed them all. And on Monday, he said we've been having negotiations for 2 days. So was he lying on Friday?
I don't think he was lying. I think he just realized I cannot bomb.
No, but did they have negotiations? Have there been negotiations between Donald Trump and the Iranian regime?
I think it has happened.
You do?
I think it has happened, yes.
Well, that makes one of you.
I know Iranian government, they never, ever will tell you the truth.
Well, let me introduce you to Donald Trump, Daniel. Here is someone else who will never, ever tell you the truth. That's why I'm intrigued by the question. I don't have to choose because I'm not on the radio with a blowhard presenter insisting that I pick a side in an almost impossible thing. But I mean, how on earth? I mean, they're both propaganda outlets. One's the president, one's a propaganda outlet. They're both proven liars. They've both got a completely...
Do you believe when Iranians said...
No. The sentence. No, I don't. I think they lie all the time. But so does Donald Trump. So who do you decide is lying now?
I do not put my money on Iranian government.
But Donald Trump said they couldn't negotiate because there was no one to negotiate with. And then 3 days later, he said, we've been having negotiations.
There's always someone to negotiate.
So he was lying on Friday. Why was he lying on Friday?
Because he is a liar. But when it comes to this, he's not the biggest liar.
He's not. Would you like to buy a bridge?
Look, would I trust him? No, but I know dealing with the Iranians...
Mate, you've highlighted it perfectly. You've highlighted it perfectly, which is why I said at the beginning of this hour, there's no such thing as expertise in this place. There is just experience, and your experience involves more knowledge of the Iranian regime than it does of Donald Trump, and therefore you wouldn't trust a single syllable that comes out of their state-sanctioned mouths. I'm the same with regard to Donald Trump, so 50-50, split the difference. I'll go 51, don't trust Trump. You go 51, don't trust Iran. Let's call the whole thing off.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
On opposite sides of the world, but is the attack on 4 Jewish-run ambulances in London linked to Iran? President Trump, meanwhile, says the war is postponed.
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Whether your dreams are calling you outdoors to reconnect with nature or towards moments of pampering and relaxation to rejuvenate your soul, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of 3 incredible experiences thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny.
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. If you are a landlord and you have existing tenants, you must send them a copy of the government's information sheet by the 31st of May, or risk a fine. Find out more at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
The Thames Link train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
It's not easy being a clamp stuck on the wheel of the one person on the street who didn't tax their car. Yeah, Graham at number 7, I'm talking about you. Bet the neighbourhood group chat is as well. Wish I had a group chat. Maybe I can chat to myself.
Hi, Clampy. How's it going?
Not great, Clampy. Being clamped to the only untaxed car for miles is so lonely.
Over 98% of drivers tax their vehicle on time. Tax it. Don't risk it. Visit gov.uk/DVLA/taxit.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12.52 is the time. Henry Riley's here with the fast becoming the most popular feature in the history of LBC Radio. It's called Riley's Reform Roundup, and it has more jingles than you can shake a stick at.
There's quite a few. Do you want to hear?
Yeah. We're short of time.
Okay.
But I'll give you your head.
Here's Simon's entry.
Riley's Reform Roundup! No.
Oh, that's not
That's clever.
Yeah.
And then I'll give you... We'll save some others, but yeah, one other quick one is... This is from Bradley. It's called Unlimited, Keith. That's the unlimited one.
It ain't half hot mum.
It's sort of catchy,
isn't
it?
Is that it?
Yeah.
It doesn't have Riley's Reform Round.
Which is markdown for that.
But that's my favourite. I think that's brilliant. Anyway,
stories.
So this is a feature dedicated to paying proper attention to Nigel Farage's shower with the sort of scrutiny that most British media normally reserves for Keir Starmer's late mother's donkeys. Carry on.
Lots to get through. Two quick ones. Firstly, reform-led Kent County Council. That's one of the councils they won, James. You'll recall it was sort of seen as the shop window for Reform UK.
Yes.
They've voted through a wage increase, although it's allowance for the councillors.
Well, for themselves.
Yes, an allowance increase less than a year after the council leader
had
promised.
Can't they just promote gold bullion like Nigel does, or do some cameos?
Well, they're putting through a 3.8% increase in allowances. Mm. Previously, Linda Kemp-Caron, the leader, had promised to cut members' allowances by 5%, which would have seen £200,000 diverted to councillor grants. That was a very popular policy.
Right.
But they've now decided to increase a 3.8% increase in allowances, with the leader there saying it's entirely reasonable and doing it now rather than whooping increases in the future.
Any other party members got anything to say about this?
They have voted in by 45 votes, passed by 45 votes to 22.
I'm interested in the 22. Is there a Green Party councillor called Stuart Heaver, for example?
Yes, there is. Oh, that's what you're getting at. Stuart Heaver has... We'll edit that out. Stuart Heaver has said it was inappropriate...
We're live, mate.
Oh, are we? Sorry. Inappropriate timing and bad optics to award ourselves a nice little pay rise.
Yes, okay.
Another story. A Reform councillor has announced her candidacy for a constituency that will not exist at the Holyrood elections.
Are we splitting hairs here? I mean, can she stand for it?
Well, she can stand for a different seat. So this is Audrey Dempsey, who was previously suspended from the Labour poll, quit the Labour Party amid a row over racist comments.
Oh, dear.
She claimed that
first attracted her to Nigel Farage's party?
She claimed that racist attacks on white children and teachers had been rising in schools, which was not backed up with evidence. She has said that she's going to run in the seat of Glasgow Proven, but it's been pointed out that actually won't exist, and that there's other seats she'll have to stand in. She posted a subsequent video where she clarified the seat that she would be standing in. Third story for you, James.
She sounds very clever.
That's Audrey Dempsey, who was previously Labour now.
And three,
Nick Candy. This was in the front page of the Sunday Times yesterday. He's the treasurer. So there was a story in the Sunday Times where he's a billionaire, he's a donor, he's the honorary treasurer of Reform UK. He met several figures subject to international standards on a visit to Nicaragua last week. He was welcomed by the regime. Just to remind you, that co-president who welcomed him, although they didn't officially meet, she welcomed his arrival in the country, is sanctioned by the UK over human rights violations, undermining democracy and rule of law, and the repression of civil society. She described him as a brother and a comrade.
Oh.
Nick Candy has said the visit was arranged so key stakeholders of the company could review the project and its operations, saying it was solely...
What's the project? Is it gold? Diamonds? Emeralds?
It's to do with gold, is yes. Right. Metals exploration. A Reform UK spokesperson saying it was a business thing. It was nothing to do with his official position. Let me just quickly play you, James. Lewis Goodall on LBC yes. Challenged Robert Jenrick about this yesterday.
Nick is a businessman. He meets people in business. I've seen this allegation. I don't know all the details of it, but it doesn't seem like there's a story there. As far as I can tell from reading the article, he went on a trip, met somebody who wasn't sanctioned and conducted perfectly legitimate business and according to the law. I don't know what the Sunday Times is trying to do. It's obviously not a national story. They're only doing this because he gave a donation to Reform and they want to have a pop at Reform.
The leader of that country who is alleged to have conducted
Lewis, that he'd met somebody who was sanctioned.
Grave human rights.
But he hasn't actually met
someone. Well, that's what the Sunday Times is saying.
No, but he hasn't actually met someone who's sanctioned.
Described him, someone who has grave human rights abuses against them, described him as comrade and brother. Is that a good look? Is that the sort of person you want as your honorary treasurer?
Well, I don't know what the details of the story are. He can't control what somebody else says about him, but it seems to me that this is a totally ridiculous story where there's nothing to see here. Reform can't control what businessmen do around the world, and we shouldn't be ashamed of having successful business people want to support us.
He knows that this guy is the treasurer of his own party, does he? Because he's talking about him as if he's just some random businessman.
Yes, he does know
that. Are we sure? Because this is honest Bob Jenrick. Did you see what he said? You'll like this. So this is going back to last April when he was trying to accuse Keir Starmer of not being sufficiently Christian and not properly honouring Christian festivals. Do you know where I'm going with this?
Go on, keep going.
He said he didn't go to church on Psalm Sunday.
Oh!
He wrote it. And to be fair, I give the Daily Telegraph a lot of stick, but there are a lot of people on the Daily Telegraph who tell me how much they enjoy me giving the Daily Telegraph a lot of stick because they have to work with these clowns. A sub-editor left that in. So he wrote,
Are we sure? Is there such a thing? I mean, I'm a Catholic, not an Anglican. Is there a Psalm Sunday in Anglican church?
Even if there was, he was writing about Palm Sunday. But this is what they do. They pretend to be Christian. They co-opt Christianity and they've got no Psalm sincerity. Sunday. They haven't got Psalm Sunday with honest Bob Jenrick. And finally,
Nigel Farage. That's the end of the Reform stories.
We'll
James.
Go in on the story about cryptocurrency funding tomorrow because that needs a bit more room. But tell me, what disgusting things does Nigel Farage do for coins?
Well, this is a video that Nigel Farage released on Cameo. This was 10 days after his election as MP for Clacton. Nigel Farage sent this message on Cameo.
They have to go back. Now, hello, Andrea Haworth. It's Nigel Farage here, and we're told you don't like comedy, but your friends are trying to get you to attend Road Rage Terror Tour comedy show, but you're hesitant. Now, look, it's hosted by Jeremy McKenzie, Derek Harrison and Alex Rend, and it's currently the most talked about show in Canada. So do you know what, Andrea? Just sometimes in life, we're a bit reluctant, a bit hesitant to go and do things we don't really fancy doing, but for the sake of a couple of hours of an evening, why not give it a go? You never know. You might walk out saying Road Rage Terror Tour is the best thing that ever happened.
Now, Road Rage Terror Tour is a Canadian show, but the leaders have been identified as a far-right extremist group. They're sanctioned by the US State Department. Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, has described the group as a white nationalist violent organisation. Nigel Farage's, this was 10 days after he was elected as an MP, Nigel Farage's spokesperson said, well, he did it in good faith, he did it without proper knowledge of the individuals. A spokesperson for
Can he Google things?
They are quite a well-known group.
Yeah, I know.
If you were looking up...
But, I mean, if you Googled them, you'd get a full chapter and verse on exactly what and who they are.
You would.
But you're too busy cashing the checks, perhaps, to actually Google who it is you're bigging up on Cameo, I think it's called.
That particular group, lastly, James, disputed their portrayal, but said, quotes, we used him, Nigel Farage, for a laugh and to cause him this trouble as a consequence for being lazy and stupid enough to say anything for a dollar.
They said that about him.
The
white nationalist said he was lazy and stupid enough to say anything for a dollar.
That's what
we're going to rename our feature.
Representative said,
lazy and stupid thing has he said for a dollar? More on that tomorrow.
£141, by the way, I've got to say.
Is that how much
much it cost?
That's about $180 or thereabouts. Don't at me with the exchange rate. Congratulations, I should have done this sooner, to Georgia Hunter-Bell for picking up a gold medal in the world indoors at 1,500 metres. Incredible. I follow that closely because I'm friends with her parents. Doesn't that make you feel old? you're friends with someone's parents, and they became grandparents for the first time about a month ago, and now they've got a gold medal in the family as well. Happy
someone
day.
Someone asked me if I had grandchildren 2 days after my 60th birthday.
Did you punch them?
No, I didn't.
You should have done.
I was busy cooing over their two-year-olds.
That's allowed. They had good reason.
That's allowed.
You sure they weren't offering you the job?
I love them.
If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free global player. You know all this. Download it anyway. Tom Sorbitt with you at 4 on LBC. Sheila Fogarty with you now.
Thank you. At 3 today, well, throughout the afternoon, in fact, we're going to talk about it more at 3, but throughout the afternoon we'll have updates on the ambulance attacks. The Prime Minister, the Health Secretary and MPs condemn the attacks on 4 Jewish-run ambulances in London. Do you, as a British Jew, feel they are truly in solidarity with you? I know already that many of you don't, but let's talk about that. At 2, oil prices have dropped since Donald Trump said the war against Iran is postponed. Do you want him to stop, or do you think he still has unfinished business with that regime? He says talks with Iran on ending the war are going well. Can we trust him on that, or anything in fact? We all want the war to end at some point, but does he cry wolf too often for us to understand anything he really means?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, the US president says he's ordered his military to postpone attacks on Iranian power facilities and infrastructure for 5 days. Donald Trump had given Tehran an ultimatum, open the Strait of Hormuz to all vessels or face the destruction of its plants. But he's now rowed back on that, saying the US and Iran have had productive talks. Dr. Justin Bronk, a senior research fellow at RUSI, told LBC the president's words are encouraging.
In any context, it's always horrendous to see power and you know all that power entails in terms of water and other services for civilians being attacked. So great to see a pause in that, and of course encouraging if there are indeed talks ongoing.
An arson attack on 4 ambulances belonging to a Jewish group in North London is being investigated as an anti-Semitic attack. Officers say they are actively searching for 3 suspects. The vehicles belong to a voluntary Jewish medical group and were set on fire in Golders Green overnight. Lawrence Blitz is from the group, which is called Hatzalah.
What happened overnight is shocking in the extreme. We have no time to grieve. To our community, our schools are open, our shuls are full, our shops, cafes and restaurants busy. Life goes on.
The health secretary says the government will pay to replace the ambulances. 2 pilots have been killed after their passenger plane crashed on the runway at New York's LaGuardia Airport. The Air Canada jet hit a fire truck. Executive director at the airport, Catherine Garcia, has been giving an update.
Initial numbers indicate 41 passengers and crew were transported to the hospital as well as the ARF officers. At this time, we understand that 32 have been released, but there are also serious injuries.
Health officials say there have been no new cases of meningitis reported in Kent since yesterday. 8,000 people have now been vaccinated. Of 34 cases reported, 20 have been confirmed. Forecasters have warned a big change in the weather is coming over the next week. Colder and wetter conditions may bring thunder to parts of the UK from Wednesday onwards. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 40 points at 99.58. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.16. And the LBC weather, sunny spells for large parts of England and Wales, outbreaks of rain in northern Scotland, and a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Tim Humphrey.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello. Hello there, good afternoon to you. I think it's probably an understatement to say that Donald Trump's statements, public statements over the weekend, particularly those he posts on Truth Social, couldn't be more starkly different. On the one hand, you have the first one, which I'll read out in more detail a bit later, but you have the first one that's basically saying, don't even think about continuing this war or closing the Strait of Hormuz, or we will obliterate you. He used the word obliterate, obliterating their power installations. And then all of a sudden, we get one overnight that says, great news, we're involved in really productive talks, and I'm going to postpone the war in the hope that we can end it completely, essentially. Those are the two messages. So which is it? It's so hard to read this man and anything he's involved in, isn't it? Are we looking at the start of de-escalation, or is this just more of Donald Trump's media games? It's so hard to tell, but this is too serious, isn't it, for games. The cost of living pressures driven by the conflict in the Middle East will be discussed at an emergency COBRA meeting later by our own government. Sir Keir Starmer, cabinet ministers and the governor of the Bank of England all due to meet this afternoon, and expected to discuss the impact on supply chains and energy security as well, something we've been talking about a lot in the last few weeks, haven't we? The Prime Minister says he fully understands public concern.
With the Iran war, most people are very concerned now, not only what they're seeing on their screens in relation to the conflict itself, but also that question of how's it going to affect me and my family. And so today we're looking at the economic impact. And I am asking for every lever that's available to the government to deal with the cost of living to be discussed.
Well, I'm joined by Ambassador Philip Rieker, Assistant Secretary of State under the Trump and Biden administrations. He was ambassador in the UK between 21 and 22, now a partner at the DGA Group Global Advisory. Good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, Sheila. Always a pleasure to join you at LBC.
What did you make of, let's start with the first of the two Truth Social posts I talked about. I noticed you shrugging and laughing a little to yourself. How do you read them? That first one was very aggressive, almost gung-ho and threatening, you know, real military threat in it. How do you read those? What do you make of it?
Well, you know, it's very much an example of President Trump at his improvisational best. I mean, this is not a leader, a president who focuses on institutional processes, on expertise. You know, he goes with his flow, as it were, and particularly through these social media posts that are full of hyperbole and you know, superlatives and extremes. It bounces from one thing to another. Sometimes it's between days. Other times it's just hours. You go to sleep at night. And you wake up the next morning, everything is different. So we have here an example, I think, of him realizing that he'd gotten himself and the country and the world, frankly, in a bit of a state, shall we say, in the straits, no pun intended, in this Iran endeavor. And now he's declaring victory, I think, at least in this latest post. We'll have to see how uncomplicated it is to unwind.
Well, is he declaring victory in the latest post? Let's give people a sense of what it says. It's almost softer than that, unless I've misread it. Pleased to report the United States of America and the country of Iran have had over the last 2 days very good and productive conversations regarding a complete and total resolution of our hostilities in the Middle East. And he goes on. Is that a declaration of victory, or are we seeing him try to find, as they say, an off-ramp, a way out of this?
Well, I think you're right. It is an off-ramp. For Trump, it will always be a victory. He'll go back to say, look, I took care of Iran when